for the colleges. What we are emphasizing is the need for the control environment to work for the benefit of that college, because we're cognizant that the mandate that the college is carrying, it is for the benefit of the community around that space. So what we're advocating for is the strengthening of the control environment to enable the facilitation of the service delivery that is intended in that space. There is a question that was posed by Honorable Batolile, together with Honorable Tembekwayo, Honorable Litsie, and Chairperson as well. And in summary, to say, what are the reasons for the delays in this audit? And NSPAS, the comments on NSPAS in particular. In the main, this audit, they were delayed because of the information flow that was coming through to the auditors. It was just not just at the right level. And I think I'll make an example of NSF and maybe NSPAS in particular. The turnaround time for NSPAS, for them to give our audit teams information, it just completely delayed. So it makes it impossible for the team to then execute at least the minimum audit procedure that will enable the AGSA to reach some sort of a meaningful conclusion. And I think we're cognizant of that because of the significance of the NSF, NSPAS, we also would like to provide the committee with specific insight in that space. So we opted not to close down that audit prematurely. We then decided that we'll extend our audit procedures so that we probe some of the matters. You will also be pleased to chair, particularly faced to the amended audit act, the tender of to both NSF and NSPAS. So which would mean that NSPAS is now operating on the amended Public Audit Act. So we are facing in the principle of material irregularity. I do know that as it stands, we are in the process of issuing some of the material irregularities so that we solicit response from the administrator in particular. But the team is just coming very slow to enable us to close that audit on time. But I think as the AGSA, we're also reflecting on how best to then close it in the years to come, just so that we don't have to continue to be delayed since coming as intended to have it. In terms of when will it come through, when will those audits come through, we are intending to finalize all this, obviously, by the 30th of November. And we were asking in particular that we come back to the committee, particularly on those audits that are outstanding, especially NSPAS and NSF in particular. So we would be coming with that, with the audit outcome and the report in that instance, once the committee can give us a specific date. There was down to the repeat offenders. I think I'm acknowledging that comment, because if we do the audit, the success thereof will only how quickly do management give our audit teams the information as and when it is requested, to just ensure that they rise and run quicker. Acknowledge the comments made, but also acknowledge the comments made by yourself, Chairperson, especially around the university. So just to clarify this, the law provides the AG the option to either audit the universities or not to audit the universities. And every year, the AG would make, in his at the beginning of every financial year, we will make a decision on whether we are taking over those Section 4.3, as we term them, the entities or not. And the universities, as it stands, rightfully, as you put it, they are not forming part of the AGSA. They are audited by the private firms as appointed by the universities themselves. What we do is, like you said, yes, we are looking into the independence of those auditors and decide to concur or not to concur with the firm that may be flagged for appointment. I wanted to allow Michelle to just close the issue around the specific areas that cost the qualification of services and construction as raised by Honorable Batolile, and also give the response to the exact conflict at theatre as it was raised as well. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thanks, Habo. Thank you, Chair. I am going to start. I'll start with the Chair. So there was a conflict of interest that was identified by the grant manager there. The grant manager owned a company which was then awarded a contract. And then they awarded their own company a contract. The investigation is going on in by Chieta, so they are performing an investigation in the matter. The grant manager is not an employee of Chieta anymore. So I hope that gives the background. So it was not necessarily a family member, it was giving an award to a company they were a director of. In terms of services CETA, the qualification, services CETA, their qualification, it was mainly on the commitments and the payables. And here, this was when we were auditing. So if you look at the main business of the CETAs is to enter into contracts. And as the contract the service is being provided, the amount, there would be an amount that would be a payable. So what is an amount that is due while the contract is happening, or either we look at the commitment to say the contract was for this value, this was how much was already spent, this is how much is still going to be invoiced, which will then be a payable, and this is how much you are still going to, your commitment still on that project. If you look at that, those schedules that support the financial statements to give you a reliable payable, so your creditor's amount that is due and amount that is committed for future, we could not get to adequate information to support what services CETA had disclosed the financial statements. So there were various errors that we identified in terms of those schedules. There is also one on irregular expenditure where we disagreed with them to say there was an amount, the 7.5% project administration, that the 7.5% that they've exceeded as project administration, which we said that it should be disclosed as irregular expenditure, and the CETA did not disclose. But in the main for services CETA is that project management to give you a reliable creditor's amount, which should be disclosed as your payables, as well as your commitment balance, that should be also disclosed in your commitments. And there we could not get appropriate information. For construction CETA, here it was mainly on a what we call limitation, but this means that we could not get supporting evidence also on the commitment as well as the payables balances. We also could not get information on how they got to a provision that they've disclosed in the financial statements. So for construction CETA, it was mainly on us not being able to get information to support what is disclosed in the financial statements. And then for services CETA, it was mainly to say the amount you disclose and what you actually have do not agree. So those are the main ones on those areas, as well as then CETA. So I hope I've covered those two. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Department, can you respond to that? I saw the DG is on the platform.
Yeah, thank you very much. I don't know, perhaps, Chair, to note the questions that have been raised in respect to these matters. Then we deal with them after the presentation with the department, because some of the issues would be collaborated in the presentation. But we'll take guidance from the chair.
I asked a question about universities. Why the standard of reporting lower than that which is in the PFMA?
The matter that we deal with based on the prescripts of the Higher Education Act as to how the finances of the universities should actually be monitored. And I think it's some of the areas that we are reporting on in respect to the financial health of our institutions in the presentation, and what has been our experience then in respect to that. So it's a matter that could be explored. Of course, we are engaging on these matters with our legal services, and where it is appropriate, we always put measures in place into ensuring that we hold the institutions to account.
Okay. I think we will come back to this point after your presentation, but just note it. Noted, we will then come back to that. Maybe as you report on your annual report, you can also report on this point. It's quite worrying. These are public institutions. And I was reading somewhere, universities receive over 50% of their funding from the voted funds by Parliament. So they receive money from the public purse, and yet they do not want to account. And there is all sorts of defenses, so to speak, why they shouldn't account. They are autonomous, there is institutional autonomy. They are not subject to the Public Finance Management Act. They can do their own thing. They can come up with their own supply chain policies. Basically, they are given a license to do whatever they want to do. And my reading of the Higher Education Act is that the department is empowered through the minister to make regulations that will determine how they should structure their own issues there and how they should report financially and the supply chain management policies. So there is nothing stopping the department and the minister to put the same standard as those that are applicable in the public sector, because all these institutions are using public money at the end of the day. So it's something which is very worrying, but we'll come back to it. I think let's thank the Auditor General for the presentation of their report to the Portfolio Committee. Indeed, the Auditor General of South Africa is a constitutional body. It exists to stand aside and accountability of public institutions and make sure that the public resources are utilized prudently and in line with the laws. So you help us a lot in your audit, and the work that you do strengthen our oversight work. So I would like to take this opportunity and thank you very much. We will then come back to the outstanding audits. It is our wish as the Portfolio Committee that we process the annual report and we consider the audited financial statements of the NSFAS before we raise this this term, which is going to be the first week of December. So we will work with you to see how soon we can finalize. Of course, we don't want to put pressure on you to do your work, but just take that into consideration, that we would like the current administration to account for the things that happened during their watch. As I said, I'm worried. I'm extremely worried that the institutions, especially in this portfolio, that gets to be put under administration, they perform the worst more than when they were not in administration. And it's a matter which is concerning. For two financial years, NSFAS, which adds over 35 billion of public money, is not able. It's always found wanting when it's supposed to account to the Auditor General. And it's a matter that is very concerning to me and to the committee. How I hear today, you're a bit mild in terms of explaining the frustrations that you are getting from NSFAS in terms of the turnaround time in submitting documents. Yesterday when we spoke, you were using the word terrible. But I can hear today you're a bit mild. You are in a good mood. But it's very worrying that there's that kind of lax in how information gets to flow between the entity and the Auditor General, because that is a mechanism of accounting. But anyway, thank you very much. Let's then move to the presentation of the annual report of the department. I see
the AG is still here. So on this matter that you are raising, Chair, on the question of regulation for universities specifically, there are reporting regulations that were developed, Chair, in conjunction with the AG. I think what then would be perhaps need to be scrutinized, are they effective enough in order to give the results that the Chair is actually talking, you know, about? Because the issue, I think, the Chair is asking is the effectiveness of the regulations as they are at the present moment. But they've been developed, they are there, they are the ones that we are using to monitor these institutions and to hold them to account in the main. And some of them are a review, taking into consideration some of the experiences that we had. But if AG would want to comment, they may comment in that respect. But it's a matter that we take it quite seriously, Chair, as you are actually raising also this matter quite sharply. Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry for that interference.
All right. No, thanks, DG. How would you want to say something before we then move on?
Thank you, Chair. The key area that we are putting the department and the sector, the university sector on, it is one on the concurrence and two on the predetermined objectives. I think we're very cognizant that the audit of performance information is quite specialized in nature. It is AGSA main, it is the AGSA main area of speciality. And therefore, in that regard, we developed the methodology that the SEMS are using to audit the universities. But I've got your being on supply chain in particular. And I think to that extent, we would not particularly have given any with regard to whether they should form, the university should form part of the PSMA, because they're excluded on the basis of the PSMA. Then all other things that comes afterwards, they're almost null and void for them. And I've got your question as that, because once it's a legislation perspective in terms of changing it, then it would not necessarily be the AGSA territory. But all other areas of implementation that are already incorporated in the current legislation, especially, like I said, on the predetermined objective, we are supporting the department. So I think that space we're a bit comfortable in terms of our guidance that we are providing over to both the department and the auditors. So there, Jay, I guess I'm still hoping that there is an opportunity for the department, the portfolio, to consider bridge the big difference between the PFMA-regulated entities and the universities in particular, because I think I've got your consent to be primarily around that. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much. You know, I saw on your presentation, in respect to the CETA Act, I don't know whether it's the Act or it's the regulation, requires that the standard must not be lower than the PFMA. So there's one entity where that has been factored into legislation or in the regulations. So there is no reason why in the regulations that can be a requirement to say whatever standards that you come up with must not be lower than the standard expected of a performance, financial conduct, financial reporting, and all of that, that is described in the PFMA. So that is possible.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Chair. I think you are referring to the CET Act, actually, for the one for the TVET. There is that clause that the department had imposed, and we use that clause a lot to try and change a couple of policies on the TVET. So you're right. You spot on. Thank you.
Okay. All right. okay, thank you very much, AG. I think let's move. I've been made aware that the Deputy Minister is on the platform. I was trying to locate his name here. I couldn't see it. But I've been made aware that he's on the platform. Manamela, we will start with you to give us the open remarks, and then I'm sure the DG will come and lead the presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I've been here since the beginning of the meeting, listening in on the presentation by the Auditor General of South Africa. And but also we are quite honored for us to be presenting this 2019-2020 annual report for the Department of Higher Education and Training. Now, as we all know, that the annual reports by government institutions are a necessary tool and mechanism to account on the work that we've been doing as government, and it is critical to account on the specific work undertaken during a financial year and reflecting on how appropriated budget was spent. And so for the Higher Education and Training Department, 2019-20 was the last financial year of the period covered by the department's 2015-2020 strategic plan. And therefore, the report we are presenting today will reflect on the work relating to the final year of the strategic plan period. And it was during this financial year that the annual performance plan was amended to align with the priorities of the new administration under the leadership of the current president, President Cyril Ramaphosa. And so notwithstanding the above, the strategic plan commitment of ensuring that the post-school education and training system is driven by sound legislative framework, appropriate teaching and learning support, infrastructure development and maintenance, and a strong stakeholder network remained intact. We value so much today's engagement as it grants us the opportunity to showcase the progress we've made in delivering on this commitment. It is an opportunity not only to account, but also to share with the committee the good work that the department continues to do amidst the challenges encountered. And today's presentation focuses on the progress we've made against the annual performance plan targets for the year ending 31 March 2020. The major achievement, obviously, is that of an unqualified audit report over the last 5 years. And of course, our intention still remains to achieve a clean audit. And I think those deliberations that took place earlier on show that, that remains our commitment. And we're hoping that, the tide will turn so that we ultimately achieve a clean audit, not only as the department, but across all entities. And whilst it must be acknowledged that a number of areas in the system could still be improved, there has been a market improvement and positive impacts linked to the financial injection received from the government. The implementation of the new student funding program and rigorous oversight of processes at the National Student Financial Aid Scheme in an effort to ensure that the effective and efficient implementation thereof remain the primary focus of the year under review. Total audited student headcount enrollments at universities in the 2018 academic year was 1,085,586, which is an increase in enrollment of 48,584 over 2017 academic year, or 4.7% growth, and represent 25,000 more students enrollment than targeted by the system. And therefore, this is encouraging that the annual growth in enrollments at public universities averaged 2% over the last 5 years. In addition to the increase in enrollments, Chairperson, the public higher education sector has also seen improvements in graduation rates. Total number of university graduates produced per annum was 227,188 during the 2018 academic year and exceeded the expected target of 208,224. In the 2013 academic year, there were 180,000 graduates, representing a growth of 25.6% over the five-year period to 2018, which translates to an average annual growth of 4.7%. This signals that the system is improving its efficiency as output numbers are increasing at a substantially higher rate than inputs which are enrollments. I'm also pleased to indicate, Chair, that the community education and training colleges are now independently operational and functional. Policies have been developed to strengthen the capacity of 54 community learning centers to pilot the community education and training concepts over the next 5 years. Financial management systems of CET colleges were developed so that they comply with the standards set in the Public Finance Management Act 1999 and its regulations. And I did take note, Chairperson, of your question as it relates to the universities, particularly as it relates to this point of compliance to the Public Finance Management Act. And it's something that we'll have to, zoom into and look seriously into. With regards to TVET colleges, the credibility of examinations has improved significantly, and all public examination centers participating during the 2019-20 examinations have released their results to eligible students in accordance with the management plan. This is quite a significant achievement considering the persisting challenges we have had in regard to certification backlog. On 12 August 2019, Chair, we gazetted a new CETA landscape, which heralded the appointment of new accounting authorities and chairpersons for the 1st April 2020 to 31 March 2025. While the financial year closed on a dramatic note with the announcement of the lockdown due to the COVID-19 pandemic, our focus will remain to benefit our students and the country in general through saving lives and saving the academic year. And I trust that even greater levels of success will be achieved and that we can continue to rely on all our institutions and students in ensuring the expansion of our valuable post-school education and training system. Once more, we're quite thankful for this opportunity by the committee for us to present the annual report for the year under review. Now, we have quite an expansive team led by the Director General and some of the DDGs from our department, and the DG will introduce those. Chairperson, that the team is quite capable with engaging with some of the issues and concerns that may come up. And there's no issue if there aren't any concern, but we're quite happy to be presenting this. So I'll hand over to the DG, who will not only help us with the presentation, but will also lead the team as it relates to the question and answer session, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister Manamela. Thanks for your opening remarks. DG?
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, Honorable Member.
DG, just sorry for the interruption. How long do you think your presentation will take? I just want us to manage time properly.
We've got 60 slides, Chair.
So you need an hour.
Maybe 50 minutes or so.
Okay. Yeah, not more than 50 minutes then. All right.
No, thank you very much, Chair. And also my colleagues in the department. Mr. Mkiba will load up the slides. Mr. Mkiba, as you promised.
Yes, DG, I'm trying to load the presentation.
Where is the music coming from? From Giver. Where are you, Mr. Giver?
I'm in the office, Chair. I'm next to the magistrate court, and there are people. DG, I'm trying to load this thing. I don't know what's happening here.
Yeah, it's just click on the right. Yeah.
Bushiri's people are making noise there.
Yeah, Bushiri's people are making noise. Here it is, Chair.
Arenas, you need to open it first in your computer, close all the other things, and then you'll be able to share that particular one. All of your information, your files.
Oh, I thought it was projecting because it's...
You should have asked. You should have asked Dr. Parker. She's quite good on this thing.
Can you see it now?
Yeah, yes. We can see it. Go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Next slide. Yeah, here we are presenting the 2019-20. For this 2020, the department had committed in its annual performance plan of the steering mechanisms that the department has been developing over the 5-year strategy. Challenges of the TSET system. The annual report at an institutional level. Let me just emphasize this, Chair. Institutional level, determine how much the funds of the institutions are and what are the contributors to those funds. At that, what we established was that the state contributes to university budgets of universities, only about 38%. The institutions, they fend for themselves. I think it's important to put that picture in this meeting, taking into consideration the matters that are under consideration. And if that has increased, I don't think it would be above 40%, that is contribution of the into budget of universities combined.
So that identified information, sorry, DG, that information,
yes, yes.
For which year?
It's the detailed work that we undertook during the 16-17 financial year. We can update now, but be that as it may, I don't think it has exceeded 40% contribution by the state to the budget of universities.
Okay, the latest one was released Statistics South Africa very recently. Please consult that one.
All right, sir. No, thank you very much. Identifying challenges and areas that need improvement and or intervention, teaching and learning support, institutional governance, infrastructure development and maintenance, as well as social inclusion. Next slide. It should be quick. Various oversight reports have been produced as planned. Now, the financial health of institutions. Universities are required to submit annual reports by July each year in terms of the reporting regulations published under the Higher Education Act. The critical aspect of analysis is the financial health of the system against a set of indicators that we develop together with them. The purpose is to identify institutions that are requiring support or interventions thereof. Hence, you would find that some other institutions would be a candidate for administration and other forms of intervention. The annual financial health report provides insight into financing and sustainability of institutions and the sector as a whole. Now, infrastructure development and maintenance. With regard to universities, there is a grant on infrastructure and efficiency which was introduced in 2017-18. In 2007-08 financial year. I think to date it has accumulated up to just more than 28 billion. Allocation in 3-year funding cycles to support infrastructure development plans, utilization of funds is monitored, and progress with respect to infrastructure development of the system is assessed and reported annually. With regard to TVET colleges, a new infrastructure grant has been introduced. The rollout plan for the construction of new college campuses is being implemented in various provinces. Maintenance of infrastructure at colleges is being managed in terms of costed maintenance plans. However, infrastructure spending has not been at the level as expected. Now, on the transformation of institutions, let me just take about a few minutes here, a minute or two. As part of staffing South Africa's university framework, the department is implementing a comprehensive program to transform and develop university staff. Now, this is done, amongst others, through clearly spelled out programs. The first program is the one we term it as nurturing emerging scholars in the university system, where we identify students in their final year of undergraduate or honors and masters for academic performance, so that those, we channel them through a very detailed support program so that they are able to be infused into the academic activities of the institution and use their potential into coming academics in these institutions so that they don't opt out of the sector. And the other program related to that is the New Generation of Academics program, which involves recruitment of highly capable scholars as new academics against carefully designed and balanced equity considerations in light of the disciplinary areas of greatest need in these institutions. We create posts in these institutions where they have to employ the academics who are emerging through the programs that we have developed so that they get absorbed in there. And the institutions, they also put in their monies to increase the numbers that we have allocated for them in this particular program, so that they are able to address the question of equity targets. The third program, which is very much important, is the existing academics capacity enhancement program. Here, we seek to address the development needs of permanent and contract staff within institutions. We give them funds, bursaries, support to study, to attain PhDs, you know, etc. And the other program is the development of professors in the system that we are also funding and the accelerating in the program that we have in our institutions, so that we are able to transform these institutions for what the country has actually desired. So the report annually on progress, development and challenges is always submitted, analyzed, and interventions would be determined. So in total, Chair, there were 69 targets in the 2019-20 financial year. 40 were direct outputs of the department, of which 78% of them have been achieved. 29 were system targets. So these system targets are targets that we discuss with institutions and agree with institutions that they would be contributing into this and that and that and that indicator within their realm of their practices. It would relate to access. We discuss the question of enrollment with them. Success, to what extent do we need to take the pass rate and success generally in the system? Transformation and other systemic areas of strategic interest to the department. In this respect, only 59% of the system targets have been achieved. So the overall achievement in the system is 70%, and I will talk to the specific areas as we get along. Next slide, Mkiwa. Program three, it's universities, Chair. The purpose of the program is to develop and coordinate policy and regulatory framework for an effective and efficient university education system and it provides financial support to universities, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, and National Institutes for Higher Education. There are six budget sub-programs. Program management, university planning and student funding, institutional governance and management support, higher education policy development, research, teaching and learning development, university subsidies, to develop the strategic objectives, to develop policies, guidelines and plans to steer the university education system towards achieving the goals that we have determined. To annually provide management, statistical and narrative information on higher education through oversight, monitoring and implementation, to provide teaching and learning support services aimed at improving access to quality teaching and learning in higher education institutions. There were 10 planned outputs for the financial year ending 31st March 2020, 9 were achieved. The achievements, I will just run through quick on this. Amongst others, it would be guidelines for student funding for DHT bursary scheme for students at public universities, guidelines on international scholarships that are offered by government departments, ministerial statement on university enrollment planning, plan for piloting the central application system for universities, a revised student leadership capacity development program, 100 new generation of academics program posts were allocated to universities as planned, 134 additional academic and professional staff at universities were supported to undertake doctoral studies through the university capacity development grant, the one I've just spoken about. International scholarships programs were implemented through international country-level partnership agreements as planned. There were 12 oversight reports that were produced, including the following: financial health, use of foundational phase programs, teaching and learning, research, cohort study, report on higher education. Next slide, Mkiba. Infrastructure and efficiency grant, new universities, EMA grant, ministerial enrollment programs, institutional governance, compliance of post-school higher education institutions with the regulations, BRICS partnerships, university capacity development program. The target that has not been achieved, it relates to the draft regulatory framework for university fees. And in this respect, we were delayed in the main by the data that we expected from the system, which was still not available to actually conclude the work that has been undertaken in respect to that. Then these are the targets, Chair. The ones written in green, we've achieved those. University enrolled students that are enrolled in public higher education institutions, we have achieved this target. Graduates in engineering sciences from universities, graduates in human health and animal health from universities, we haven't achieved this chair. So universities set these targets and we monitor and give support to them in respect to this, but they were not able to get to the mark of 11,000, but the variance that is normally allowed is a range of 2%, which they are within that particular range. If you go further down as well, success rates at universities, we had a target of 78%, but only 77% that was actually achieved, because any institution where there hasn't been a success rate in terms of performance, it pulls down the entire sector. That's what is actually happening in respect to this one. The next slide. On this one, it's in respect to the universities that are offering accredited TVET college qualifications. We set a target of 10 universities, but 9 were able to actually pull through. It's one which has just finalized its own processes. It will be coming on board quite soon. Students in foundation phase programs. The target here that was set in the MTSF, it was 35, but we managed to get to 21,730, reason being that some of these students, quite a sizable number of them, were at UNISA, and UNISA was not offering this particular program. So we had then to withhold funds to it, and VUT was not accredited to offer the programs in terms of the accrediting processes. The program which is following is TVET. The purpose of the program is to plan, develop, implement, monitor, maintain, and evaluate national policy programs, assessment practices, and settings for technical and vocational education and training. There are 5 budget sub-programs: program management, TVET system planning, institutional support, programs and qualifications, exams, financial planning. Its strategic objective is to provide oversight for an effective TVET college system, to develop and review TVET steering mechanisms in support of sound PSET system, to implement oversight instruments on TVET colleges to ensure effective monitoring and evaluation of the TVET colleges. There were 7 targets. It's only 2 that was achieved, and it will be explained as we get along in respect to this. A national average of 73% compliance with approved financial governance standards by the 50 TVET colleges was achieved as planned against the 65% target. All public TVET college centers complied with national policy in their conduct of national examinations. The targets that were not achieved and the reasons offered thereof. This one of infrastructure, only 21.74% actual expenditure was spent against the planned 70% of TVET maintenance expenditure in terms of the budget. The challenges that were experienced, I will elaborate a bit further on this one. What is happening here, Chair, is that the Minister of Finance made a pronouncement of funding infrastructure maintenance in TVET colleges in February 2018, and then the correspondence which is confirming as a normal practice from the National Treasury was then received towards the end of March, which then TVET colleges for the first time had to use public funds for the maintenance of infrastructure. Now, the guide to this is the infrastructure asset management standards that have been developed by the Department of Public Works, which regulate infrastructure maintenance, where they actually direct that the money should actually be based on the criticality for utilization in the public sector, where then institutions, colleges had to develop master plans in respect to maintenance in their respective campuses, and then submit those to the Department of Higher Education and Training for approval based on the conditions that we developed together with the National Treasury in order to ensure that there is proper accountability for the funds that have been deployed to this sector within this financial year. So the work packages then that were developed were actually shared with the department through its TVET branch. The predominant reasons for the low actual expenditure then in these colleges is that majority of the approved work packages totals are above the 500,000 procurement threshold, thus requiring formal tender processes that would be compliant to CIDP regulations in the construction sector. These tender processes take on average of 3 to 4 months to conclude. I think the honorable members would acknowledge that the issue in respect to financial management in the TVET college space, it's still a challenge, as the AG has actually alluded. So these monies would have to be deployed there based on very sound and practical monitoring and accountability mechanisms that we had to put in place together with the National Treasury and approved by the AG so that there is proper accountability. So it goes in tandem with building the capacity for infrastructure maintenance and infrastructure built in the TVET college sector, where these TVET colleges have been assisted in the appointment of officials as clerks of works and to manage facilities in their colleges. Through, amongst other things, the facility that was established at Gert Sibande, which is also assisting the monitoring and ensuring that there is no wastage in the construction of more than 20 TVET college campuses in the country at the present moment. It took more than 3 months to issue certificates to qualifying candidates, the other target that was not achieved, the qualifying candidates for certification. The challenge was in relation to COVID-19 restrictions that prohibited the movement of persons and goods between Pretoria and the districts where these activities are taking place. This affected the dispatching of certificates for the November 2019 examination to different TVETs and private colleges. The other target not achieved, development of revised funding norms, concurrence by the Minister of Finance was still pending, and the National Treasurer only submitted formal input on the 20th of March 2020. The other target is CET Act regulations for TVET colleges. The regulations were developed but could not be finalized for approval by the minister, being the challenge being that the Office of the State Law Advisor issued a formal legal opinion indicating that the proposed CET regulations are not consistent with the CET Act. They advised that the department should reconfigure the proposed regulation into a ministerial determination. Only 4 out of 6 oversight and monitoring reports that were produced, 2 reports on certification backlog, 1 report on the performance of TVET colleges against planned enrollments, and 1 report on teaching and learning, 2 reports were approved outside the reporting period. Next slide, and Eva. This one is in respect to the headcount enrollments in TVET colleges. The target there is 710,535, but we managed to achieve 657,133. That distribution, Chair, to the previous slide, Giba, because it's quite important to explain what is happening here. The headcount enrollment in TVET colleges, state-funded, is the money which is coming from the state. We are supposed to fund TVET college in 80-20 split. 80% is what is allocated in terms of subsidies to TVET colleges. 20% is from the fees that students pay. But because we don't have all this money as the department, we were funding them initially at 54%, and the rest they have to find other sources of funding to get to 80% of that subsidy. But the National Treasury came to the party and began to upscale allocations to address this shortfall. We are at 62% at the present moment. That's what it actually says. Then the headcount enrollment in TVET colleges, that is college funds, it's 18% in order to fill up that gap up to from 62% to 80%, of which around 170,000 would come from them. That's what we put as a target, but they managed 119,000. Then other headcount enrollments, it's other funds that would come from other sources. There, the target was 45, but we managed to get a 43 as a target. So the total, therefore, is that 657,133. From all those pockets of the of funding, the state, college funds, and funds from other sources, CETAs included in there. Point number two there, qualifying TVET students obtaining NSFAS financial assistance per annum. That figure has been achieved, Chair. Next slide. So in here, Chair, is the TVET students enrolled in foundation phase programs. We targeted 4,000. We managed to have 3,412 because it's voluntary. This target. The other target that was not achieved is the throughput rate, where we targeted 36%, which is not quite good, but it's the baseline, but we managed to get 31.8%. Funded NCV level 4 TVET throughput rate, 36%, we managed to get 31%. TVET lecturers undergoing specified hours of work in their industry for specified periods. We targeted 33%, but were able to get only up to 7% because we have get funding from various sources, including CETAs, of which that was what we're able to get. Next slide. This is program 5. The purpose of the program is to provide and monitor the national skills development strategy, develop a skills development policy and a regulatory framework for an effective skills development system. There are 4 budget sub-programs: program management, CETA coordination, national skills development, quality development, and promotion. 4 out of 5 targets were achieved. Next slide, Mkiwa. These are the achievements which it took 37 days to process, receive 3 test applications against the target of 60 days. The artisan pass rate averaged 69.8% against 65%, a total of 24,049 against 24,000. 5 oversight monitoring reports. Let's get to the next slide. A total of the target that hasn't been achieved, a total of 16,000 artisan learners were registered against the target of 30,000. And the challenges that were encountered, the availability of workplaces for 2019-20 associated with the struggling economy had an impact, the change of the reporting format with the introduction of the workplace-based learning program, agreement regulations, and the rollout of the artisan recognition prior learning process had an unintended negative impact on the registration of learner agreements, as well as COVID-19. We can't use COVID-19 here. It affected us on the 27th of March. Let's move to the next slide. Then the target that we didn't achieve, the web-based learning opportunities, we fell short there about 1,000 and some odd. Next slide. You are twisting him, Giva. Yeah, it's community education and training. the colleges. The purpose of the program is to plan, develop, implement, monitor, maintain and evaluate national policy program assessment practices and systems of community education and training. There are four programs: program management, city colleges, system planning, institutional development and support, financial planning, education and training, and development support. Its strategic objective is to implement appropriate monitoring instruments for the city college sector. There were only two targets for the 20 year, and both targets were actually achieved. Report on the city college sector performance and the draft progress report on monitoring and evaluation of the sector. The headcount enrollment in the colleges, the target was 340,000. The actual there was 149,000. Certification rate, 45%, we managed to get 44%. The target on headcount enrollment was not achieved because of poor planning at college level, where they did not provide centers with enrollment targets. The usage of varied admission tools compromised enrollment data storage and hampered proper reporting, and the poor return rate of reporting tools. Only 56% of community learning centers submitted their enrollment data. Poor advocacy to attract students to city colleges and limited access to infrastructure, because we have to utilize the infrastructure which we share with the basic education. With regard to the certificate rate, the reason are inadequate budget to provide sufficient learning and teaching support materials for students, as well as the lack of suitable qualified lecturers in CET colleges. Now, program two, the purpose of the program is to provide strategic direction in the development, implementation, and monitoring of departmental policies and the human resource development strategy for South Africa. It is comprised of four sub-programs as follows: policy planning, monitoring and evaluation, social inclusion and equity, international relations, legal and legislative services. The strategic objectives: monitor and improve the implementation of policies, coordinate and facilitate social inclusion in the PSET system to support teaching and learning in the PSET, to provide management information on PSET to inform decision-making and planning, to secure international scholarships in order to advance our human resource capacity. There were 9 planned targets, and the 8 were achieved as planned. Achievements is a list of the targets that have been achieved: amendments to NQF, 2 reports that have been produced, skill supply and statistics on PSET. Various oversight reports were also produced. Education and training materials have been made available on an open educational platform. At least 2 agreements of international scholarships were entered into with foreign countries. It's Hungary as well as France. The target that was not achieved, it was the policy framework on gender-based violence due to the processes that are currently under discussions and unfolding at the present moment. We're looking into ensuring that this is finalized quite shortly. Program one, which is corporate services, is to provide strategic leadership management and support services to the department. There are 6 budget sub-programs: ministry, department management, corporate services, office of the chief financial office, internal audit, office accommodation. The strategic objective is to ensure effective human resource management within the department through sound human resource management practices, including staffing, human resource development, performance management, organization, human resource administrative systems, and also to ensure effective financial management in the department to improve ICT services as well. There were 7 targets, 6 were achieved. The targets that have been achieved, it's it's a list of them. I won't just go through all of them. The department will field the posts that are funded within the time that is required, and 92.98% of funded vacancies were filled during the financial year, exceeding the target of 90%. All 100 disciplinary cases were concluded within 90 days. Network connectivity uptime, 99.50%, we exceeded the target. Unqualified audit, development and implemented a remedial plan on audit findings of the previous financial year. The target that was not achieved is still in respect to invoices from creditors paid within 30 days. And the challenge here is always a miscommunication on processing of transactions and authorization due to large volumes of work. A sensitized manager to monitor and enforce compliance on 30-day turnaround process at official through monthly 30-day memoranda and departmental news flashes. The second area, Chair, is the financial information. And on this one, I would request the CFO to take the portfolio committee through, Chair, with your permission. CFO?
Thank you, Deputy. Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. I'll be taking you through the financial information, which is Part E of the annual report. In that section, we have the report of the accounting officer, audit committee.
the CFO, what's happening with the CFO, DG, the CFO, we know, isn't Mrs. Makukule the CFO of DSI? What happened to the CFO?
In respect to the CFO, Chair, there are two things that have happened. He submitted application for retirement by the 31st of October, and there also was a subsequent disciplinary inquiry that was unfolding, which has actually recommended a sanction of dismissal as well. So the CFO now, who is taking us through, is Ms. Makukule. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Makukule, is she not, but we were with you yesterday, as the CFO of DSI.
That's correct, Chairperson. I'm still the CFO at the DSI, and I am acting CFO at DHCQ.
Ms. Makukule, you are the CFO of two departments.
For now, yes.
No, she is assisting here at whilst the processes of fulfilling the CFO post are unfolding. So it's the one who is the assisting the department since last time when we presented, you asked the Chair the question, and I started to clarify the basis on which she is here. So now is the one who has been working in the department for some time. That's why she's presenting with us.
No, DG, I think maybe you might not fully remember what happened. The last time when you presented the APP, I think we asked where is the CFO because he was not around. And then you said he has taken leave. And you since clarified that he was placed on special leave. I think it was special leave or suspension, I can't remember. But whether there is a an acting CFO who is not within the Department of Higher Education and Training. This is news to us. This is a new information. That's why I'm trying to get some clarity whether with effect from which day, because we were with Maypreet yesterday when she was presenting the audited financial statements and other financial information. We were congratulating them yesterday. So I didn't know that she's also acting on two different departments. Since when was this arrangement entered into?
I might not remember the exact day, but it will have been around the 24th of August.
Of August.
Yes. Just before when the audit was at its peak. I can check my appointment later, but it was towards the third week of August.
Okay. I see Honorable Lithia's hand is also up, and then we'll allow you to proceed.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I think you covered me on one part, on when did Ms. Makukule start, DHET, that's what, that was one. But is the DG saying the previous CFO, I forgot his name, the white man, is saying, I apologize, Chair.
No,
I apologize. I withdraw, Mr. Trudeau. Is the DG saying he was subjected to a DC and subsequently found guilty and dismissed? But before he was dismissed, the DG saying he had filed for retirement. So what is it, what happened there? I think that is extremely important for us to be clarified because at the later stage when we ask questions, I think we'll ask questions based on the information that the DG must provide us now. Is the Mr. Trudeau dismissed or he was found guilty and dismissed after he had taken early retirement, Chairperson? That is my question. I think this one is almost similar to the former VC of CPUT, the current advisor at VUT. And I think, Chairperson, I want an answer on that one quickly so that we can ask proper questions later on. Thanks.
There are two things that have happened. The CFO submitted early retirement by the 31st of October, but simultaneously was a process of a disciplinary inquiry that was unfolding, of which it finalized, I think, around 23rd or so of October, and everything got finalized in respect to the letter of dismissal on the 26th of October. So as the status stands, he has been dismissed in respect to the duties that he was responsible for in government and in particular in the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Okay. All right. I think we'll get we'll ask some more questions as we proceed. But I just want to find out the state of Mrs. Pretty, whether what is then your role in the Department of Science and Innovation? Are you still the CFO there?
That's correct, Chairperson.
So you are the CFO in DSI, yeah, the CFO in the DHET.
Yes, Chair.
Okay.
The person is missing Bobo. Can I maybe also verify?
Missing Bobo, who is missing Bobo? By the way, just refresh our minds.
I'm the DDG for corporate services.
Okay.
Yes, the person at the time when the previous CFO was put on the scene. We were at the hype of the audit.
Bobo.
And
can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, can you please switch on your video? Let's see your face.
Okay, Chief.
From your side. Unmute yourself, Ms. Mbogu. You are muted, eh?
Yes. I'm saying, Chairperson, at the time when the CFO was put on suspension, we were right at the height of the audit. The Auditor General was actually finalizing the audit, and it was then felt it necessary that we needed additional assistance in the form of a CFO at that time. And Ms. Makukule was then appointed to act by the minister. And she couldn't be full-time seconded or appointed because the post was not vacant in the DHET. But we needed a hand in the form of a CFO to perform the duties of a CFO. The minister is now in the process of permanently seconding Ms. Makukule into the DHET because of the volume of work that is in the position of the CFO. The process is just about to be completed, Chairperson, for her to be full-time in the DHET on a secondment basis. And the DG for DSI will be appointing an acting CFO for the DSI.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So it is allowed that you can have a DG or a CFO for two departments at the same time. Does the law allow that, Mrs. Mo?
Chairperson, she had to be co-opted to come and assist with the volume of work that was there during the audit.
I'm asking, does the law allow? Is it legal?
The law does not. It doesn't disallow it, Chairperson. It had to be done because of the crisis that we're about to find ourselves as a department. Because after the CFO, we don't have a chief director responsible for finance in the Department of Education and Training. We have a chief director for supply chain management. The next level is a director who was reporting to the CFO.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, the situation makes sense in the department. But why didn't she then leave there and somebody else be appointed where she was? Because she can't be in both sides. If you need the resource, and I think the reasoning makes sense, but why does she have to remain as the DSI, as the CFO, still that side? I don't think
we
allowed to hold two positions in the public service. I mean, you act, you are substantive here, you act there. And I think it's a situation that should have been remedied. But I think let's proceed. From where I'm sitting, I don't know. I think we'd have to get some advice whether it's quite an unusual arrangement to have Ms. Makukule was here yesterday presenting the report of science and innovation as a CFO that side, and she's back again with us today as the acting CFO of another department. I don't think it's very unusual, but let's proceed. I think Ms. Makukule, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. How much time do I have, Chair?
We had given the overall time of 15 minutes. I don't know whether...
It expired 11:35. But
okay. How many slides do you have, Chair?
I've got 20, but I can try to be quick and brief.
Yeah, they are very important, the slides. I think let's... How many minutes do you want? 10, 15 minutes?
Less than 15 minutes will suffice.
Let's make it 15 minutes then.
Okay, thank you so very much, Chair. Like I was saying initially that I'll be taking you through the Part C of the annual report, which comprises of the report of and the report of the Auditor General is the one that contains the audit opinion, as it was presented earlier on. And the greater part of Part E section comprises of the audited financial statement for the financial year 1920. I will also touch a little bit on the management letter action plans as the way issues of internal control deficiencies that were raised when Auditor General presented earlier on. You can move, please. You can move. So in terms of the report of the accounting officer, it provides a summary of the financial affairs of the department, which I will present when I present the audited financial statements. The accounting officer's report also includes an overview of significant events, which I won't go through. They are in the report in the interest of time, and also key policy decisions that were taken during the year under review. And also the issue on the four-month skills development payment holiday has been disclosed in the accounting officer's report as a significant event that took place after the reporting date of 31 March 2020. We have discussed this matter, Chair, at length with the Auditor General during the audit, and we have agreed that even though this relief was granted after the end of the financial year, it has a material effect on the budget of the CITAS, and therefore it's warranted that it should be reported as a significant event after the reporting period. Hence, we also see when we look at note 30 of the audited financial statement, that has been disclosed as a non-adjusting event after reporting date. So in terms of the report of the audit committee, the audit committee report is consistent with the concerns that were raised by the Auditor General earlier on. They have expressed their concerns on the effectiveness of the internal controls. They have mentioned that the controls in the department were not entirely effective and that there were several instances of non-compliance that were still reported on, and this was specifically on the reporting of performance information. We have noted earlier on when AG was presenting the audit outcome to say even though the department achieved an unqualified audit report, there was a matter of audit on predetermined objectives that was material, and therefore it affected the audit. It was reported in the audit report. And the audit committee, however, they were, I'm still on the audit committee, they were satisfied with the contents and quality of the monthly reports that were prepared by management as well as the financial statements that were submitted for audit. They also emphasized that the performance information reporting environment still requires further improvement, as I mentioned earlier on, in order to ensure that the information reported going forward is valid, accurate, and complete. And I'm sure also, as it was noted from the AG's presentation on the performance information issue that is in the department's audit report, I just want to assure the committee that management is taking these concerns that were raised by the audit committee very seriously. The DDGs have developed the action plans for their reporting, for their respective rather branches, and the progress on these action plans will be tracked accordingly. We also have agreed at EXCO that the monitoring mechanisms need to be intensified, because the action plans process was there before, but the fact that these internal controls still seem to be weak, it means then more needs to be done in ensuring that the action plans and the implementation thereof is effective. So maybe to close on that report, I know this one is not on the slide. The audit committee also expressed their satisfaction on the work that has been done by the internal audit. We can move. So in terms of the report of the Auditor General, I will not take longer because this was discussed at length earlier on. Just to highlight that the report does confirm that the department has received an unqualified audit, and that there are no material adjustments on the financial statements that were presented for audit, and that there were no material issues of non-compliance with the legislation, and also that there was a material issue on the audit of predetermined objective that was raised in the audit report. We can move. The part of the financial statements, the audited financial statements, we have the appropriation statement, which is the first part of the AFS in Part E. And as a department overall, we had a budget of 107.3 billion during the year under review, and 89 billion of that was appropriated through the voted funds. And then we had 18.2 billion that was from direct charges. That is the money that gets appropriated to the CITAS and the National Skills Fund. And then in terms of the spending from voted funds, we spent the 88.2 billion rand, and the money that was appropriated from the direct charges was fully allocated to the CITAS and the NSF. And we then had a variance or underspending of 227 million rand, which constitutes 0.2% of the overall budget. So it means we have spent 99.8% of the budget. And this is just the breakdown of the 227 million rand that was unspent, the money that will ultimately have to be surrendered to National Treasury. We normally do it after the audit. I'm sure it will have been surrendered already. And we can see that most of the unspent funds there emanated from the CET budget, and also followed by the TVET and administration budget, and also university education branches. And we also have Program 2, which is Planning Policy and Strategy, or with Program 5, which is Skills Development, that had the lowest remaining budget at year end. Okay. And this is the same analysis of the variance of the 0.2%, which is the 227 million rand, but now it's analyzed in terms of the economic classification. And we see that most of the money actually comes from goods and services and the compensation of employees. We had unfilled vacancies, and also the late claims that we normally pay under those two categories. We also realized some savings from various areas, such as the provision of examination services, which normally impact both compensation of employees and goods and services. And also there were some savings under goods and services, such as the consultation of project management fees that will have incurred on the student housing infrastructure project, and also on the feasibility study for the new head office, which was not incurred as projected. And those three last items, which is the transfer, capital assets, and financial assets, had the very lowest remaining funds at year end. You can move. And here we also extracted from note 6 of the annual financial statement on page 267 of the annual report, which provides the details of goods and services items. There are more than 20 items in that, but we also just extracted the top 10 so that it gives the committee perspective as to what the department, what were the top 10 expenditure item that the department incurred their budget on. And this, maybe it's also important to mention that these top 10 items constitute more than 90% of the spending that has been disclosed under Note 6 of the annual financial statement. We also see on that slide that as the department, travel and subsidies has the biggest allocation, and also in terms of spending, and it follows by computer services, and as you go through all the way down until the last one, which is the audit cost. That's normally our budget and spending for external audit that gets paid to the Auditor General. We can go. So these are the reasons, as the last slide was actually also showing the variances in terms of those top 10. I'm not going to go through them because these reasons are related to what I have presented earlier on when I spoke about goods and services underspending at the departmental level. Picture, these are the transfers that we've made during the year under review. We're transferring over 90% of our budget to our various entities, and we can see on this slide that our universities are taking the biggest chunk, and also we see NSFAS, I think it was mentioned earlier on that they had a budget of over 30 billion rand, and we see then other allocations that went to our other institution, the Council on Higher Education, 53 million rand. South African Qualification Authority had about 70 million, and the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation had about 26 million, and we'll go through the list until we have the public service data down there. And here now, Chair, I've concluded the first part, which was main part of the financial statement. I think I know I was presenting yesterday. I will just actually repeat to say also for this purpose, we did not include necessarily include the statement of financial position and the cash flow in the presentation, because due to the fact that we are preparing our AF financial statement on modified cash basis, so there is no much difference between those and the appropriation statement, but the details are in the main document, which is the annual report. So now we now add the disclosure notes of the financial statement, which is now an additional disclosure over and above the normal set of financial statement, and also we've picked up areas where our viewers that it, those areas are important to highlight the committee, which is the area of irregular and fruitless expenditure. And in terms of the irregular expenditure, maybe reference can be made to note 25 of the financial statement. We have a closing balance of 138.239 million rand as at the 31st March 2020. In the prior year, we had a closing balance, so it means when we opened a financial year on 1 April 2019, that closing balance I'm referring to now was an opening balance on the 1st of April for this year that has been audited. It was 138.194 million rand. So the difference between the opening balances that I have mentioned is 45,000, which is the irregular expenditure that was incurred in this financial year. So the remaining balance is the balance that would have previously been reported, but there was no movement on it, either maybe the matters have not been closed, hence we still see the balance sitting there. So item 7 on the slide is a new irregular expenditure that was incurred in the period under review. And that also, it relates to procurement processes, I was told that it has to do with an official who allegedly extended the service provider scope of work without following proper procurement processes and investigations in that regard. It's ongoing. And item 1 to item 6, then those were part of prior year opening balances that I spoke about, and hence I said the reason the balance has not moved is because these matters have not yet been concluded, but I'll give the committee details in the next slide. We can move to the next slide. This slide provides information on this subsequent the information on the status of the investigations, and we try to update it as to give it as closer to the current situation as possible. And if we'll remember the last slide where it was showing item 1 to item 7, the very first item showed about 138.7 million rand, and is the one actually that constitute the biggest chunk of this irregular. Was incurred, this 138.7 million was incurred over an accumulated irregular expenditure over the period of 3 years, which is a contractual period, which was actually because the contract was, the contract has ended. It was a contractual period that we had with the travel management company, where then apparently then the procurement processes were not properly followed. And we can see the explanation on the slide. It says the appointment of a service provider which did not score the highest point points during the evaluation. And investigation in this area, I'm told, was concluded, and the matter was handed, is currently being dealt with by the labor relations officer. You can move. So this is still the same matter, but this was now the second year of the contract, of the 138 million rand contract that was in care also in the last slide was 15-16 financial year. So this was in care in 16-17, which was year 2. We can move. So on this slide, the first item is still on the same matter, and this, I believe, it was the final year of the irregular contract. If we add those three amounts together, it will reconcile back to the amount that we, the 137 or 38 million, I can't remember. I think it's 137 million earlier on. And it's also the status is the same because it's about the same matter. And then the second issue is also in terms of the irregular expenditure for about 228,000 rand. This was also part of the matters that were previously reported, as it was incurred during 17-18 financial year, and the disciplinary processes were concluded, and consequence management was implemented accordingly. And now we are in the process of implementing the recommendations of as to how then do we treat that balance. We can move. These are still matters that are emanating from the prior year. All these were procurement-related matters. And investigations for the first three matters were concluded, and they have been referred to legal services for the legal opinion. And on the fourth matter, disciplinary actions against the responsible officials were taken, and also there we need just to follow the procedure as to how then do we treat that balance or how do we take it out from our books. And last matter is also emanating from the prior year, and the investigations were not concluded as the reporting date. And the last one now on the irregular is the one that I said it was incurred this financial year, and I think I've mentioned that it's still under investigation. And then in terms of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, this is disclosed under Note 6 in the annual financial statement, which is on page 281 of the annual report. We had a closing balance of 9.593 million rand, which also emanates from the previous financial year. This matter is still under investigation by the Hawks, and the investigation was not yet finalized at year end, and even now when the audit was concluded. So hence we still have the balance here. It is important for me to mention, Chair, that the department did not incur any fruitless and wasteful expenditure during the year under review. We can move. Chair, I think the issue of internal controls has been deliberated in the discussions earlier on today. Despite the fact that we have one matter that is affecting the audit report, we still have findings in the management report, and these and these findings from different areas. So this suggests that there are areas indeed that where we still have internal control deficiencies, as it was highlighted previously by the governance report. The action plan that I spoke about earlier on that the DDGs have developed for their respective programs will be submitted to the accounting officer for approval, and the process on the implementation will be discussed at EXCO. There is a standing item on this matter, and we have really, the issue was of intensifying the monitoring was also deliberated on, and we have all agreed that we need to commit to that. And the progress report will be submitted on regular basis to the minister, to the DG, who is also a chairperson of EXCO, and also to the audit committee. We can move. And I think this will be my last slide, Chair. And in terms of the impact of the overall financial performance on the operation of the department, we believe the level of spending was significant. The underspending was significantly low at 0.2%, so it did not necessarily have any negative impact on the operation of the department. And also the department has put measures in place to prevent the overspending of the vote. But we also just feel that it's important to mention that we had lots of budget cuts this year, even subsequent to the special adjustment budget. We had some cuts twice, and then we mentioned the fact that this potentially, if these cuts continue, and they will hamper the ability of the department to deliver on key programs. And also the issue that the department, most of our programs, we implement them through the COE budget, where payments for the lectures are incurred. And also as a department, we need a budget for compensation so that we can have the ability to monitor and oversee the billions that we are transferring to the entities, especially now with the function shift of the TVETs and the CETs. And also the issue of universities that was raised earlier on, also it suggests the fact that the department, we need to have capacity to monitor those funds. So the continuous budget cuts may actually hamper our ability to do so as required in terms of Treasury Regulation 8. Point 4. Chair, I don't know if you can give me a minute. I wanted to comment on the presentation that was made by the AG earlier on. They have mentioned that the health of the department is concerning, and they have cited the possible cash flow constraints and the fact that we were at year-end in a net liability position. I just thought maybe I need to comment because this is very important, and maybe also important to provide clarity to the committee. The arrangement, Chair, is that we have projects that are funded by the National Skills Fund, but some of them are being processed through the department. So the department will pay for the expenses and then claim back from the National Skills Fund. But sometimes there are challenges of in cases where then we experience delay and payments are not being paid back to the department on time. So this is also what happened at year end. So the department finds itself in a situation where it had to pay expenses not as part of the appropriation, but obviously it will have affected the bank balance of the department, because this will be expenses that will not be necessarily be part of our appropriation. And hence it looks like we are having a negative or an unfavorable cash position. So I thought maybe I need to clarify that, but we are trying to explore a process with the NSF where we can actually receive the funds for them in advance, so that this concerning health situation, we don't continuously find ourselves in. And I hope this arrangement of getting funds in advance will materialize. Thank you, Chair.
Can you just repeat the last explanation?
Okay, the last of the National Skills Fund.
Yeah.
Okay, there are projects that are funded, that are approved to be funded by the National Skills Fund. And some of those will be processed through the department. So the department will incur and pay for those expenses and claim the reimbursement from the entity. So that is how the process is. But what has happened here at year end, some of the cash that the department had paid was not necessarily reimbursed by the entity. Hence, it showed the unfavorable cash position for the department.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that is a big issue that the Auditor General is raising. I'm sure you have seen it under financial health. They are basically questioning the going concern status of the department, whether the department will be able to meet up to the financial commitments and the service delivery commitments. Because if all the creditors are due, the money that will be liable will exceed the cash flow of the department or the budget of the department. I don't know whether that was not explained to the Auditor General. Was it explained?
Yes, Chair, it was explained. My understanding would have been, maybe they can also confirm or clarify if I'm not representing the facts correctly, that even that was the case, they would have been bound to do their health check, financial health check calculation based on the actual figures and the actual situation of the department, which was the net liability position, because the cash is also part of the department's current assets. So over and above the negative cash flow position, it will also have a negative impact on the current current asset and liabilities. So despite the fact that the reasons for that could be justified, my understanding was that they still needed to do their calculations based on the reality and the actual numbers that was that were presented before them. But they can confirm that, Chair.
Okay, no, that's fine. Because that was going to be one of my questions. Thank you very much, the Deputy Minister, the DG, as well as the Acting CFO, for taking us through. You can stop sharing. Okay, just on the issue of the funding by the funding to universities by government or from the public purse, from appropriation from parliament. There is a study that was conducted, because the DG was quoting figures for 2015-2016. And I did say you must consult the latest, which is the Stats SA. So I just want to refer you to the relevant part there. It was released on the 28th of October, so which was very recent, I think about last week? Yeah, last week, that information. Now, according to that, There is a graph there that indicates what percentage of funding that comes from government, what percentage comes from others like tuition fees, like grants and so forth. Because I just want to close this issue, DG, so that as we leave this meeting, that issue is closed. So the average is 48% of allocation to universities that comes through government grants. That is the average. The highest universities in Mpumalanga gets 87%. You can find it there. It's public information. It was released last week. Solplaki get 86% of their funding. Only 12% of it comes from tuition. So Mpumalanga is 9%. Sefako Makgato gets 65% of their funding from government grants. 23% from tuition, 12% from other. Tshwane University of Technology gets 62% from government grants. University of Western Cape gets 60%. Central University of Technology, 59%. Fort Hare University, 58%. Zululand, 56%. Value University of Technology get 55% from government grants. University of Venda also, Cape Peninsula, 55%. UNISA, 52%. University of Johannesburg, 50%. Mangosuthu University gets 50%. KwaZulu-Natal, 49%. University of Limpopo, 49%. Durban University of Technology, 47%. Rhodes, 47%. Free State, 43%. Walter Sisulu, 43%. University of Pretoria, 42%. Northwest University, 42%, Nelson Mandela, 41%, Stellenbosch, 38%, Vets, 36%, and UCT, 34%. So UCT, Vets, Stellenbosch, Nelson Mandela, Northwest, Pretoria, and Walter Sisulu, and Free State, and Rhodes. Yeah, say Pretoria gets just about 40% and less. But the rest is 50 and 50 above. So the average is 48%, and that's why I was saying universities get 50% of their funding from the state government. So this is the factual information, DG. It's not less than 40%, it's 50% as we speak now. Okay, members, can we... Maybe we must have a body break. It's almost 12:10. We've been sitting down from 9. Can we have a 5 minutes body break and come back at 12:15? And then we'll take hands. Honorable Ngobo and Honorable Litsiye will be the first. Can we do that, members? 5 minutes body break, we'll come back. And then I'm sure we'll take an hour to discuss. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay. We're back. Honorable members, are we all back on the platform? I think we should proceed. Let me take a list of members. We said Honorable Ngcobo will be the first. Let's see. Mananiso. Not that. Mom's beer. Okay, I only have this five hands now. It's Honorable Ngcobo, Honorable Letsie, Honorable Mananiso, Honorable Notada, and Honorable Sibiya. In that order, but maybe let's just dispense with this strange arrangement of one CFO in two departments. I think let's find out if the law allows it. Let's get an explanation from the Department of Public Service and Administration whether this situation is allowed. But I'm sure it's quite a very strange one. It's something that should not be encouraged in public service, that one person is doing the same job for two different departments. It's not in line with the requirements of good corporate governance. But let's just find out if the law allows this arrangement from the relevant department and whether permission has been given, if there was ever a need for permission to be given to enter into this kind of an arrangement. I haven't heard about this thing for the first time that I hear about. But let's follow up. Let's get the proper explanation. Okay. Honorable Ngcobo.
Thank you very much.
Can I switch off the video? Yes, switch off the video.
Am I better, Chairperson?
Yeah, you're much better. I think you saved yourself some bandwidth.
Good, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, well, I don't know what to do now. I feel a little bit gagged. I would have taken the French leave, I must be honest. I stayed behind because, to me, this was an extremely important matter. For clarity purposes, because you had already given direction at that time that we will need to find more information. But my feeling was we need to get more information or advice, at least on something that we understand. I don't know whether you want us to just move away from that one or just ask for some clarity currently, current status.
On the issue of CFO.
Yes.
What is your recommendation, Honorable Ngcobo?
No, I just wanted to get some clarity, Chairperson, and I know you have ruled and you had already done so. In fact, advised that we find proper advice on whether this is permissible. But actually wonder this happened. I don't think it is interfering with your advice, Chairperson.
Okay. All right. No, I think that's fine. I think they will also speak to that issue now. But I guess we'll also have to follow up and get clarity from the relevant department, which is the DPSA, whether yes. That's permissible or what. Okay, Honorable, was that the only issue?
No, I have two, but Chairperson, are you allowing me to ask that question for clarity?
Yeah, you can do that.
Oh, thank you. Chairperson, here is my problem. It begins like this. We have at the Department of Education, Higher Education and Training, we have there's a vacancy there, and we have a CFO, and the CFO is not a permanent employee, and actually. She's not, I don't know whether to call her an employee, but at least she is rendering some services there. And I suppose she is therefore getting some remuneration, maybe let me call it compensation, for the lack of a better word. Now, that is, I think, that's the main question. Here, because to me it's rather creating a big problem if she is also getting remuneration at the DSI. However, then to continue on that one, Chairperson, I just wish to. Wish to continue because of the advice you said we must stick for. But on the same one, before you continue, the status. What is the status? What was the status of the former CFO when he left? Was he? If one were to ask, had he been dismissed from the institution, or he retired, how would the DG respond if he gets that question now? Was that person dismissed or he retired? Because seemingly those two things happened simultaneously. Which one came first and which one came last? I don't know. And how that was handled, therefore, after it happened. Well, the second one question, it's just my observation. It's the observation you made on the administrators, and I was quite worried about it. The administrators we seem to be using in the institutions seem not to be very helpful. Actually, I have observed quite a number of institutions, not only under the education sector. Entering the institution in its that bad state, only to find that it becomes worse later. It happens more. Honorable Chairperson and members, in local government, you would find a person who actually maybe used to be an MM and was dismissed, hired somewhere else, was dismissed, and end up being blacklisted. But later on, you find this person having been employed again as an MM somewhere else. And that is, there's something wrong about that. And now it seems to be taking the same trend in our sector as well. Our institutions are not getting better. Where they are administrators. That's not a blanket statement, although I'm putting it like that. But they're not all the same, not all similar. But definitely, I am saying it for certain. There are problems usually where there are administrators. Is there a way, Chairperson, maybe we can, as a portfolio, get closer to this in order to find a remedy or a tool that might assist us to resolve this problem? Because otherwise, it's going to stay with us and it will get worse than better. I thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson, and the members.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Ngobo. Honorable Tsia.
Re lebohele sebaka modulasetulo. And thank the department for the presentation. it looks bleak, Chairperson. I think the presentation by the department and the presentation by the Auditor General it looks like they don't correspond somehow, and we'll make examples of why we think that is the case. And I think maybe let me start the issue of what I think I want to support your proposal that let's get Public Service and Administration Department to tell us if it is legally all right, it's legally acceptable that one person can be the CEO of two departments. In essence, I'm asking if that is that is legal, and if not, what will it mean for decisions, financial decisions that would have been taken when Ms. Pretty was Makukule, was an acting CFO at DIET? What will be the ramifications of that at the later stage? And I hope due diligence was done on this matter, Chairperson, because we don't want, it's as if every time we do things and tomorrow we regret. I've got so many issues, Chair. Well, maybe let me start with this adjusted budget, the second one now. Chairperson, there's an amount of 1.133 billion that have been taken now by the finance minister from this vote 17, into a public enterprise for the rescue of SAA. Digi, what is the an acting CFO? What is the the implication, the financial implication of this in our space? 1.133 million rands have been taken to that thing of SAA. It's there on page 51, chapter 151 of National Treasury Adjustment, the second one, the one that was presented recently, Chairperson. Going to the department presentation, on slide 48, DG, of your presentation, you have indicated that investigations into the irregular expenditure amounting to about 30 million was incurred in 2015-2016 financial year due to the appointment of that service provider, Rennies. You said that it's concluded and the matter was Sorry, the matter was handed over to the labor relations and is currently being dealt with at that stage. This irregular expenditure, Chairperson, and CAT, or CAT, in 2015-2016 financial year, which is some 4 years ago, when was the investigation, this investigation concluded and handed over to the labor relations? Why did it take this long to finalize this investigation? Also on page 194 of the annual report, you are reporting, DG, that the that shortage of manpower and labor relations results in a unit not being able to finalize misconduct cases within 90 days. Grievances are also not resolved within 30 days, as stipulated by Resolution 14 of 2002. Shortage of capacity or manpower in labor relations unit delays the processing and finalization of misconduct cases. What mitigating strategies, DG, are you putting in place to capacitate this unit of labor relations? I started with the 2015-2016 one intentionally before I came to this one. To acts that govern labor relations. How long has the matter been sitting with labor relations? Similarly, the supply chain policy transgression, as reported by yourself, occurred in 2017-2018 financial years, where irregular expenditure of some 58 million in 2016-2017 and 48 million in 2017-2018 occurred due to the appointment of service provider not scoring the highest points during evaluation. for me, this is an indication, leadership, that the leadership of the department did not take any steps to prevent this irregular expenditure. Are the same officials who are responsible for the irregular expenditure of 30 million in 2015-2016 responsible for the irregular expenditure of 2016-2017 and 2017-2018? So what I'm asking here, Chairperson, is that is this the same person or same people who were who appointed Rennies in 2015-16? Are they the ones also who appointed these other ones of 58 million and 48 million in 2016-17 and 2017-18, Chairperson? And I've also noted that the department have also reported that these investigations are concluded and both matters of 16-17 and 2017-18 are now in the hands of the labor relations, and they are currently being dealt with there. They are also at labor relations. And when were these referred to legal services? Moving to other questions, Chair. I still want to repeat, Chairperson. The department, the DG, when you asked earlier on after the Auditor General, the DG did say that some of the things are going to deal with them now. So I want to refresh his mind about repeat offenders, your VUT, your NSFAS, your Dalits or TVET colleges, and the increase of outstanding outstanding audits on TVET colleges. Chairperson, I want to go to slide 46, financial statements. Slide 46, technical and vocational education and training. TVET, Chairperson, it says that here that the underspending per program is this. So at TVET, we understand by 74 million rand. 74 million rand. And at CET, we underspend by 96 million rand. If you calculate those two chapters, that's what? 170 million rand out of 227. So, you know, 170, I mean, that's almost more than two-thirds of the underspending of the department came from these two branches of the department with problems, where we've always said that the infrastructure, you know, and the underspending here, obviously, it's not too clear what is the underspending on. We know, Chairperson, as portfolio committee members, that the department has taken long in appointing senior management of TVET colleges. Is that 74, you know, for me, that 74 million translates to, some of it might come from administration, part of it, because of senior management not appointed. Some of it might come from a poor implementation of infrastructure development of TVET colleges, which we've always said that the leadership there that deals with TVET colleges is not taking that branch very serious. Because if they were, we would not be sitting here with so much underspend. I mean, TVET colleges alone, 7, 14, 21, they almost cost 33% on their own. 33% of the total underspending comes from the TVET colleges, you know, and that is bad. That is extremely bad. And we know that the department has not prioritized. So it means, Aruna, we have a responsibility there to do our job. We have a responsibility to fill in posts because we're underspending. I don't understand. I don't know what will be the excuse. We are underspending, but at TVET colleges, we are short-staffed. So, I mean, really doesn't make sense. And Chairperson, which then explains why Treasury would have taken 1.1 billion of money meant for the department to the rescue of SAA, because we don't know how to use it. You know, we can scream all we want, but it means if we can't use money correctly, Chairperson, it will be taken away by Treasury and it will be utilized where people are utilizing money, whether correctly or not correctly. So department assistance, what is it that you are doing with this underspending, especially on CET, where we know that we don't have infrastructure, we don't have, you know, imagine if I were to go to a CET with my big mkaba, and be subjected to sit in a seat in a primary school. You know those chairs at primary school, they are very small. Maybe that is why we've even missed the target of recruitment there. You know, it was red, we missed, you know, it's something that is done at administration phase can affect other programs of recruitment and all of those things. And it seems as if, and this is what frustrates me, it seems as if our colleagues at the department, they are not understanding it. Chairperson, we are spending, I want to go to that slide quickly. We are spending a lot of money on universities, Chairperson. I think it's 42 million. I just wanted to get to the correct slide, but it's 42 million, 42 billion of public funds goes to universities. 42 billion, Chairperson. And I am really not happy with them because it's here on slide 50 where it says transfers and subsidies. Subsidizes or that, something like that. So about 42 billion of public funds goes to universities. And when we question these comrades, I mean, 42 billion is the biggest here. For the 2 billion out of the 78 billion, it's more than 50% Chairperson, of transfers that we've made. I think that is the point we're making earlier on. Because here we made transfers 78 billion and 42 billion went to universities alone. So, and we're told when we're asking questions on universities, we're told about institutional autonomy. No, you know, people don't want to account. No, we don't use supply chain. We've got our own case in point, VUT, saying no, because of time, we decided to, our supply chain department, we decided to call people to give us. I mean, you know, that is, for me, Chairperson, that is unacceptable because it creates space for this people in universities to commit crime, to be corrupt. Because if I'm given the task, find people who sell laptops to give. So I'm giving me too much power. And when we ask, how did you do the no? We don't do supply chain. We are governed by the Higher Education Act. And therefore, we followed it to the letter. And when you go to that Higher Education Act, Chairperson, it says something different to what answers we are getting from universities. So I want to suggest, Chairperson, that as the portfolio committee, we look into this closely, and you know, we look into this issue of institutional autonomy, because we can't take 42 billion, more than 42 billion. More than 50% of all the money that we transfer to entities, to universities, and we're told as an institution of the public parliament that, no, you are overreaching, you can't ask, it cannot be. So I'm proposing that we look into this issue of institutional autonomy. We dedicate, or we speak to our legal to look at how can we best intervene there on this thing of institutional autonomy, especially on procurement processes of universities, especially on audits of universities. It can't be that they and must not be audited by the auditor general when so much money of the state goes there. I want to suggest, Chairperson, that we maybe on two aspects, on procurement and audit of those of universities, we zoom in, we get a legal advice, we enter there. Lastly, I want to read the act, Chairperson, that was given to, I think it's we start in section 4B, section 5A, and section 5B to Auditor General. That we have given since 4B, maybe let me start with this. Maybe let me start with 5A. On remedial actions, Chairperson. Yeah, if you look, apparently, people who have done wrong in the departments, apparently people who have done wrong, you know, with financial implications. And I want to ask the Auditor General, on remedial actions, what is it that we have done? Because I thought we had given the Auditor General teeth to bite to recover monies that are purported to be lost because of this one or that one, where the Auditor General must, or it says 5A, remedial, taking remedial action, part A, 1A, and 5A, it says the Auditor General must, within a reasonable time after the issuing of an audit report, in terms of section 20, follow up on whether the accounting officer or accounting authority has implemented the recommendations contained in the audit report relating to any material irregularity within the time frame stipulated in the audit report. And it goes further, Chairperson, but In essence, what it speaks about the powers that are now granted to the Auditor General to bite, to recover monies, and if remedial actions are not taken, the accounting authority or accounting officer, the Auditor General must find now how to recover those monies from those people who have failed to do so. And the last part on the CFO, Director General. The Vice Chancellor of the former Vice Chancellor of CPUT was found guilty of misconduct and was dismissed. But before they could communicate the dismissal to him, he resigned. Nothing happened to him. After serious misconduct was identified, he was charged, he was found guilty. The very same person today, I think Dateng Nobo made that point about an MM, but it also makes sense. The very same person today is now recycled in the same industry, in the same space, in the same sector of higher education, is now appointed an advisor to the administrator. Somebody found to be guilty of misconduct is now the advisor, being paid possibly from this 42 billion that we are transferring to universities of public funds. Somebody who was found to have misappropriated funds here at CPUT is now again being paid there. Now today the CFO, I mean, that's not the only thing. There's a former principal of Westcall who was, after being charged for misappropriation of college funds at Westcall, when he was charged, he applied for early retirement, and the department granted that man early retirement, and nothing has happened to that person. So the department, now certainly now, is the CFO in the office now of the department, who, according to the report from UDG, was found guilty on the 23rd of October, and communicated to him on the 26th, around the day of October. And on the 21st, he applied for early retirement or resignation or something like that. It does not make sense. How do you resign when you are dismissed? Because the report, as you said, is that it recommended the dismissal and was communicated to him on the 26th. So on the 31st, he then resigns. What is this thing? He resigns how when he's dismissed? Was he dismissed? And was he dismissed because there were financial implications on what he did? And how are we going to recover that money? If there were monetary things, Chairperson, I want to suggest that, including that one of VUT, including the former principal of Westcall, we must, I don't know how we're going to do it, we must apply that, even if it means the individual Chairperson must go open cases with this comrade, I'm very ready to do so. We'll go open criminal cases, ask the asset and forfeiture unit to freeze assets of these people, their pension, for them not to get their pension until they've paid back the money. And then those who are supposed to have made sure that monies that were squandered, they are recovered, public money that was squandered is recovered, we also charge these comrades of ours, the accounting authorities, people who are responsible, and we must do it across all boards, Chairperson, in the CITAS, at TVET colleges, we must make sure that those who are found at universities, those who are found even at skills developer CETs, those who are found to be squandering money, because they know they will just resign at the last minute and nothing happens to them. So we must lead by example as the sixth parliament, and even if we must go individually to open cases against these colleagues of ours, let's do so, because it can't be business as usual. You do wrong, you are found guilty, you resigned before, and 2 years down the line, you are appointed an administrator elsewhere. You, if you are not administrator, they bring you back as the, you know, I mean, that the services sit at the or at the MICT, there was somebody who was CFO today, yesterday, was revealed as the CEO of Services CETA when there was serious misappropriation of funds under their leadership, when their head of finances at MICT CETA. You know, and it looks like people are being, recycled like this, and it's the same faces, Chairperson, even if you look at some of these reports. So I'm actually heartful. I'm concluding, Chairperson. I'm actually heartful, and I'm proposing that we look into this matter of universities and all these people who are supposed to be charged, who are supposed to be dismissed, who are supposed to recover monies from, to do so. If not, Chairperson, let's open criminal cases against these people. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think on that one, we should therefore say we must identify all the relevant individuals against whom there are outstanding issues who seem to be recycled within the system or the portfolio. From here to there, from there to there, and recommend appropriate actions to be taken. But I hear your views. You've raised quite a number of issues. Maybe I shouldn't comment, Honorable Litsie. Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me firstly welcome all the presentations that we got today. And I must say, Chairperson, thanks to the AG that we are able to speak without fear or favor or contradictions that in CETAs people are stealing. In CETAs there's a lot of corruption. And echoing the same sentiments like at the policy. I mean, this thing of recycling people who can't even execute their task, it's very wrong and it cannot happen in our lifetime. Chairperson, the AG report is alarming for the fact that abnormalities are normal in the space of CETAs. And as well, I'm very worried about this issue of CETs and TVETs. To say the DG, when he reports about CET and TVETs, you can feel, you can see that it's by the way issue. And it for me, is going to create a problem because of we have committed ourselves to a skills revolution. The other thing, Chairperson, is with regards to issues of non-compliance. I think now we must come to a point where we are being told if there's lack of capacity and where there is a lack. So that people must know that if need be that we must appoint people and who are relevant for this department, we must do so. Everybody is hiding behind the issues of not following processes of supply chain management and so on. It's very worrisome because of these supply chain management regulations are made to actually control these things that have been happening of people abusing the public purse. I mean, Chairperson, one could want to just to get sense from the DG that if the AG emphasized on the fact that leadership must ensure that they strengthen control in their department. It's worrisome because one of the responsibilities of leadership is to ensure that they lead, organize, control, and as well give delegation to people who can do it. So, Chairperson, it's very worrisome whatever that is happening. You have covered me on the issue of the CEO, one CEO being in two departments is for the first time that I'm hearing such. And I think we would need as well legal advice on how to deal with this issue. The other matter was covered partly by Honorable Litsie on the issue of annual report on page 194. So, but my question becomes, what is the desired capacity to ensure that the unit functions optimally on the issue of fraud prevention? That's the question that I'm asking the DG. The other issue, Chairperson, is with regards to
issues of senior management levels, where we know that that we still have vacancies there. I want to know from the department, how soon are these particular posts will be filled, based on the basis that the way we're seeing this understanding by CETs and TVET, perhaps is because of there are no people who has to be able to do the work that needs to be done by senior officials. So I want to get the time frame in terms of how soon are we expecting that this particular post to be filled, as we've been asking about them every time. The other issue, Chairperson, is on page 195 of the annual report. The department further reports that within the area of national examination and assessment, there's still some staff shortages. I want to, and this relates as well to ITC system problems and as well to certificate backlogs. So, Chairperson, my concern again, what are the plans in place to adequately resource this particular unit? So I think, Chairperson, this thing of that sometimes we are being told that the issue of zero backlog is not possible and whatnot, it is by this fact that we've got people who are just speaking strategic planning on paper, but they cannot do what they are supposed to be doing by law and by the Act. So, Chairperson, I'm very worried. And I want to repeat as well what has been said by Honorable Lucia today. If you check the report of the AG and as well whatever that has been presented to us now today, these two cannot marry. They cannot relate to each other. It's like deja vu. It's as if you've got left and right, black and white. There's some confusion. And sometimes it is very worrying that when we are listening to people who are supposed to be giving us things as they are and being transparent to us, and then they give us what we want to hear, it's very problematic, Chairperson. And I want to believe that Honorable Lucia is right, that at some point, as this particular portfolio committee, we must go and open cases for people. Because we can't be every time asking one thing time and again. Why, where, when, how much? To people who are supposed to be knowing that you cannot spend 20 rand if you have 10 rand. Chairperson, I submit and I want to say they can do better than this. This is a horror movie and I wish this particular meeting was physical, because now with this 4IR thing of being visual, we cannot tell them eye to eye, face to face, that they are, some of them, if we need to tell them that they are thieves, they are thieves. Honorable Yabo once said when we were speaking with sitters, to say, you know, sometimes it is so sad when you are doing door to door and you have been told that ANC members are thieves. Yet the thieves are these ones who are, behind the white collar. So, Chairperson, at some point, we must go to police stations, the nearest police station, open cases, and then head must roll, so that people must see that we are not speaking right and doing wrong. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, thank you very much, Honorable Nodada. Honorable Nodada, are you on the platform? Okay, we'll come back to Nodada. Let's go to Mamsbia. Your connectivity is bad, Honorable Nodada. We'll come back to you. Let's go to Honorable Sibia.
Thank you. Can you maybe come back, Jen?
Yeah, you'll come back. Let's go to Honorable Sibia.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for all presentations. Chairperson, night is too bad. Always too bad in this department. The Auditor General is complaining about the behavior, your leadership in universities. lack of accountability, lack of discipline, lack of monitoring. It would be so because the officials who are, you know, which were appointed there don't meet the requirements of those positions. And the duty that and the Department of Higher Education have necessary skills to manage infrastructure projects. And what capabilities development is the department implementing to improve delivery of infrastructure projects? And what interventions will be made in future to ensure a more experiential learning through training lectures? The other one, Honorable Lucia has touched on, is from slide 47 to 53, the irregular expenditure. You have said that there are cases. We would like to know how many cases are not yet resolved, which are still under investigation. Again, the Auditor General mentioned that 1,115 million under irregularity expenditure, deviation approved without a justifiable reason, stolen cars, wine, where's the law? The award of bid not in accordance with regulations, CASA. The majority was caused by expenditure not in line with approved budget. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ms. Bia. Babu no data, all right, Bunch.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm audible, yeah?
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right, let me try my video, Chair, but if it's poor, can I then maybe test, Chair?
I just switch it off.
All right, Chair, thank you so much. Chair, good afternoon to everybody that's on the line. Chair, what has been presented to us this morning by the AG is an extremely scary picture. But more so than anything, it becomes more grim and much more scarier when the deputy minister, as one of the head or political heads of the department, comes and speaks about a very rosy picture about what work is being done in the department, in CETAs, in the TVETs, in the universities, and does not even shed any little light on what is being done on the issues that we've been picking up at these various sectors, especially around the reports. It's quite sad because you'd expect that there is at least some form of political leadership that will give direction to the administration. The presentation by DHE is also very saddening. If you want to talk about CETAs this morning, it's a mess. We'll get into them when they come to us. If you want to go and talk about TVETs, they've got extremely poor administration. The worst part of it all, Chair, in this report, they've only met 29% of their target, which is actually appalling. You know, yesterday, I mean, I was comfortable enough not to say anything in the portfolio committee meeting because you had a department that was performing par excellence and is probably not, if not the well-run, the best well-run department in this entire administration. I don't know what is. But today you have to come and sit here and listen to really, really depressing presentations about very, very basic things that needed to be done. I mean, you talk about what is happening with the CFO in the department and how that has been handled. It's extremely poor. And I agree completely with Honorable Lefria that we need to take that up even much with much more vigor, Chair, as a portfolio committee to strengthen our own oversight ability to hold people accountable. But with that being said, Chair, I've got a particular question, a specific question. Hopefully, it will, I don't believe it will help much, but let me ask the questions nonetheless. In terms of the TVET colleges, the department, in terms of Program 4, only achieved 2 out of 7 targets. It's representative in their annual report on pages 97 to 100. Like I said, it's only 29%. And this is directly due to the poor governance and management at TVET colleges. And I wanted to check if you're going to only achieve 29% of your targets, the department is responsible to ensure that TVET colleges and other entities that fall under them actually do perform. According to their own reporting, has there been any consequence management? I probably sound like a broken record, Chair, but I'll have to sound like one because it's a consistent thing. Has there been any consequence management implemented in the TVET colleges that have poor governance mechanisms that were put in place that has resulted in them poorly performing to a point where they only have 29% of their targets achieved? I think I won't touch on the issue of the certification backlog because it's been dealt with tremendously, but we're carefully looking at the administration in terms of ensuring that we reach day zero there. The second question I have, Chair, just for the TVET and my last question on them, on page 100 of the annual report, it makes reference to the TVET colleges that are obviously struggling to attract industry to lecture placements. Or lecturer placement. Why is that not regulated adequately by the department? If it is regulated by the department, what exactly is being done about it to ensure that lecturers are placed in industry? Because if you're a lecturer at a TVET college, you are supposed to be in industry to understand the different changes that are happening so that you are consistently trained to go and adjust whatever is needed for the curriculum to be relevant for that particular industry and ensure that whatever we're giving in terms of skills to TVET students is aligned with what industry will require, and you ensure that you've got qualified lecturers. Then I wanted to check. There has been a general underspending, and I think one of the honorable members did touch on this, but especially on the compensation of employees. Do we have a challenge in terms of making sure that we fill permanent posts? Why is this the case? What is the problem in us underspending in that particular area? In terms of the irregular expenditure that has been listed on page 280, there's one that has been listed there. It indicates that there's been disciplinary steps taken. There's criminal proceeding amounting to 45 million due to correct procurement procedures that were not followed, due to time constraints, which is currently under investigation. This implies that there's non-compliance generally in the supply chain management processes, which is a general consensus just across all entities in DHET. And I don't understand why that is the case. Again, I will sound like a broken record. What consequence management interventions have been implemented in this case? And how far is it if you're saying there is an investigation of that nature? Chair, I think I'll end my questions there. But I do share the frustration of the other honorable members that this is a very grim picture. It's appalling. It's discouraging. And I think there needs to be much more acceptance of the challenge in the Department of Higher Education and Training, even from the political heads, which is the minister and the deputy minister, of what are we faced with here, and put very deliberate steps of how do we correct this moving forward in terms of achieving targets that will tangibly change people's lives for the better, but also making sure that the money that is paid by taxpayers is adequately used for the purposes that it needs to be used for. Otherwise, if we continue down this line, there's nothing more than just destroying this department, and ultimately we're destroying the future of young people of this country and people that we think are going to take our different challenges that we have in the country forward. Thank you so much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Nodada. You are the last. Just my brief comments so that we hand over to the department, because at 2 o'clock we must be done. There is a sitting starting at 2 o'clock. The recent medium-term budget policy statement adjusted the budget of the department by taking away 2.7 billion. It's quite a lot of money. That money has been lost to the department. We know that 1.1 billion of that money is going towards rescuing SAE, is going to the Department of Public Enterprises. And the rest is just cuts everywhere else. But the biggest of these cuts are in compensation of employees across the board. There's allocation to universities that has been cut, and the compensation of employees. Now, it's very worrying. It's not part of this annual report, but it's going to impact the department going forward. And I would like to the department to comment on that. We might, I think, schedule a session where we get a presentation on the impact of the MTBPS on the budget of the department, because taking away this amount of money, it is definitely going to impact on the functioning of the department. It's not only money that has been appropriated by us. I think the other money comes from the levies. And already the CITAS, the National Skills Fund, have been impacted by the allowance, the holiday, the 4 months holiday as a response to COVID. So you may comment on this issue, DG and the department, but I think we might have to schedule a briefing on this because it's quite big, this matter. Maybe just to say on the issue of the two of the CFO, in the CFO of DSI and DHET, it's quite a very strange arrangement, and I think you can pick up that it's something that the portfolio committee is taking a very serious dim view on. But however, I just want to clarify that it's not a reflection on the person, Preeti Makugule. She is doing a fantastic job in the Department of Science and Innovation. She's receiving clean audits. She's quite capable in what she's doing there. What we are taking an issue with is how she gets to be deployed and in the process gets compromised. Because the proper thing to have done was to ask her to take some leave or whatever, to be seconded by DSI to DHET, and then another person be appointed there, so that she can then be the CFO of one department. Now she gets to be pulled into some arrangement which is just improper. And when she has been doing quite a good job in the Department of Science and Innovation. I just wanted to clarify that point, that it is in no way a reflection of her and her capability to do the job. Now, the other issue that I'm having, you know, we are unhappy about this outstanding audit of NSFAS. And Honorable Lithia says they are repeat offenders for the second time. It is for the second time that it is happening. What is of concern, it is the reasons why it is happening. The Auditor General says the turnaround time for NSFAS to submit the relevant document is unacceptable. She used a harsh word yesterday when they were briefing us, myself. Today she's a bit milder, but we are very concerned about that because it does not reflect on our public pronouncement. We were told the other day that there are sea changes of improvements in NSFAS. There is a sea change, but we don't see this sea change in terms of the audit process, both for last year and for this year. We are told that it is terrible, the turnaround time, and they don't want to finalize because this is an important entity and there is huge public resources that are being involved. And now it is outstanding. I think we are very concerned about this thing, because it does not reflect on an entity that is turning the corner. In fact, our observation is that things are getting worse, despite how we may want to project a different picture. But what we are dealing with on a daily basis shows an entity that is getting worse, both from the process of the audit and its outcome, and the issues that are coming out from the officials of the entity. So it's a very concerning situation. We would like that the audit be completed as soon as the Auditor General can. We are not putting any pressure, but we would like that to be scheduled before the end of this parliamentary term. The second point that I would like to raise is the point raised by the Auditor General on the reliability of performance information by the department. It is quite worrying. The Auditor General says that they are not able to rely on the information that they've been given by the department. So what does it mean? It means that the information about performance that we have been receiving, about achievements and so forth, may be the wrong information. Maybe information that may be misleading. So I don't know what will the department say, because it nullifies whatever performance against the indicators or against the targets that has been set. What the Auditor General is saying does nullify everything. They are particularly concerned about program number 4 of the department. I don't know what program 4 is. Is it universities or? I don't know. You'll clarify as DG there. But the Auditor General is concerned about program 4, and they are saying that the information that is coming out there is not reliable. We can't say you have achieved against the target using the resources that you have appropriated, because we're using unreliable information. The account, auditing committee, also raises the similar concern that it's worried about that. And I did not get to understand exactly from the presentation what are the measures that the department is taking to address this concern by the Auditor General. The third point, program 4 is the TVET. Thank you very much, Honorable Litsi. They are concerned about performance information in the TVET. And as you have picked up, the TVET story is a horror story in terms of the financial outcome. It's red. It's another color which also indicates that the Auditor General is not happy. The other point that I would like to raise is on the CITAS. And I think on this point, honorable members, let's identify three of the worst performing, or maybe even 4, and then let's invite them to present their annual reports, and let's interrogate them. Services CITA, we had about 3 meetings with them. What was very sad about those engagements is that people just come and they lie. They lied about qualifications. We were able to prove using SAQA because we had to invite SAQA. SAQA came with services CETA to prove that indeed the senior executives were not meeting the requirements as said. So they were appointed despite not meeting the requirements. The second point where they also lied to us, and I'm glad that the Auditor General picked that one up, is the is the implementation of capital projects. That they exceeded 20% of the contract amount. So the variation was exceeding the 20%, whatever percentage that was allowed there. And today we get to get that confirmation from the Auditor General. So Services CETA has been a serial underperformer. They've been lying to us. They said although they appointed people who don't meet the required qualification, but they are not going to do anything about it. So I think it's one of the entities that we need to call. But then the Auditor General also says that most of the CETAs, the construction CETA and other CETAs, they spent way over the allocation for the administrative whatever. And it's something that the department was supposed to monitor. So there is complete lack of monitoring as far as the expenditure of the service of the CETAs is concerned. And I think we need to get an explanation because the AG also says this is an issue that the department must monitor. If there is a legislated percentage expenditure that you can only spend so much on personnel, you can only spend so much on discretionary grants, you can only spend so much on these grants, you must stick to that. And it's quite clear that the CETAs are not sticking to that. The other one is on the individuals that, the fourth point, individuals that have been recycled. I think we must we need to identify those individuals because it's really unacceptable. If somebody had a case to answer somewhere and that person is found guilty or there is an adverse outcome about that person quickly goes to another entity within the same portfolio. Okay, let's say within government, and we allow that situation. It's really unacceptable that we have to get that kind of a situation. So we need to identify them as part of our BRRR report, include them, those individuals, in the report, and say that something must be done. They must be removed by the minister from the positions that they have been deployed to whilst they are still facing the issues there. The last but least one, I think the last one is going to be on irregular expenditure. The fifth point is on universities. The department, we got an explanation, but I thought DG you're going to explain this matter during the presentation, but it didn't come out. So there is no explanation about this matter as to why the Higher Education Act does empower the minister to make regulations, although the universities are exempted from complying with PFMA, but the Higher Education Act does make provision for the minister to come up with the regulations. Now the question is why are there no regulations? So many years after the PFMA was was promulgated. Why are the universities allowed to not comply with the standard as set by the PFMA? Why are they allowed to not to be held accountable on many levels, on financial reporting, on financial compliance, and all of this? And I was able to demonstrate now, given the recent Statistics South Africa report, the latest one, that almost 50% of the funds that they are using are public funds. And yet they are supposed to comply with the lesser standard of accounting, lesser standard of compliance and all of that. Why is this? Why is the department so comfortable with this arrangement? It's something that boggles my mind. Why are we not doing something around that area? We will come and talk about institutional autonomy. Okay, if there is serious contention around that, let's discuss it, especially around issues of governance. But if the nation has set the standard of conduct, the standard of performance, the standard of compliance, which governs the entire public sector, people who are utilizing public funds, why are the universities not subjected to the same standards? What is different with the universities? Because they are public institutions, they are using the resources of the people of this country. So why are we protecting them? Because we know that a lot has been happening there in that front. So it's an issue that I think we require explanation. But I think we must insist that the standard of compliance must be at the same level. They should not be below the PFMA standards. And on irregular expenditure, there's about 1.1 billion. I see the department has got about 1.3 million, just around that on this Rennie's contract. The bulk of the irregular expenditure is in the TVs, and it is in the CITAS. Now, is there anything that the department is doing to reduce this irregular expenditure? Because the bulk of it is something that the department can do to reduce it, so that there are consequences for that. And I was a little bit worried when they're reporting about what action has been taken to say still investigation completed, but there's going to be action. So if the investigations are completed, there must be action. You must tell us this person has already went to the DC or says resign, and this is the outcome of the DC or whatever the case may be. So you can't give us very limited information about consequence management when you know that it is one issue that as an oversight body will be interested to find out whether are there consequences for actions that people are doing wrong in the department. So I was a little bit worried about, I think there are about 5 irregular expenditure, and the explanation there was not satisfactory. So you'll hear that I was raising comments, I was also raising questions and way forward in the process. So that to avoid that you come back and we go on and on, we've already determined on the issues that must be the way forward. So we'll just allow the DG, I don't know whether the DM is still on the platform, choose to comment, and the DG and then the other officials. We should do that in the next 20 minutes so that whatever issues that are outstanding, we will then request that they must be responded to in writing, and if it's necessary, we can follow up. We can have a follow-up session. EM, are you
thank
still
you. Around? Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just one remark that that the minister remains committed. Just to respond to the point that Honourable Nodad and some of the members made, that the minister remains committed to, you know, deal with the issues that have been raised continuously. And the reason why I didn't highlight some of the issues in my opening remarks was precisely because, you know, they were issues that were covered in the presentation by the DG. So we do take the issues quite seriously. And some of the issues that may not be responded here, we will, as you indicate, Chair, that they will be responded to in writing. So I really want to assure the committee that the minister remains committed to dealing with this issue. I'll ask the DG to respond to the issues as raised, and then we can see what else is outstanding and then follow up on those. Thank you, Chair. DG?
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, DM. Let me just pick up a few. I will allow the DDGs, the CFO, to actually come in, and thereafter I will come. But I think the Chair has assisted in charting the way forward in respect to this matter. The key issue in respect to universities and how they account. I understand the Chair and the Honourable Members into saying the question of the autonomy that is enjoyed by these institutions needs some discussion and a review, taking into consideration some views and perception that they do not account quite appropriately. In respect to this, Chair, within the context of the applicable legislation and regulation framework, these institutions are held accountable by the department. And as perhaps it may have been seen, where there has been findings that the funds haven't been used properly, there's been interventions in all of them. There are quite a number of institutions where after assessment to the mechanisms of holding them to account, we feel that they are not explaining some expenditure item areas quite appropriately. The funds are withheld. But the point that the Chair is making and the Honourable Members is that the question of the autonomy perhaps is constraining us as government into ensuring that they actually satisfy, these institutions satisfy the prescripts of the PFMA, which is actually taken going forward. When the Higher Education Act was reviewed, this question of autonomy and the extent of, it's one of the contentious issues that the minister put firmly on the agenda, and I'm making amendments in respect to it. There are quite a number of areas, but I won't get there. But the extent then to which it has to happen, we got an advice from legal minds into saying that if perhaps we push this quite hard, because the Constitution is not quite clear in terms of the limitations or not thereof in respect to autonomy, but it asserts autonomy of these institutions, we may risk a situation whereby the ruling which would become a case law, may be in favor of those who are actually litigating against the extent and the nature of the autonomy. But I think in the processes that the Chair and the Honourable Members have suggested, it's a matter that would actually be engaged quite extensively. Thank you, Chair, for the way forward. On the underspending, I think the figures here are saying it's 0.2%, which is counted as underspent. Now, the question then becomes as to whether, is it a normal or acceptable range, or is it an anomaly? I'm not talking to
expenditure items, deliberately, Chair, but in the overall, with a budget which is with us, it's 0.2%, which is not spent. The last point I just wanted to emphasize, Chair, is that the department has received unqualified audit opinion with no material findings. In respect to the financial management and administration, the department has received, if you like, clean audit. What then impacts into the department not getting in the overall clean audit is in respect to performance information. Performance information which relates to students that are funded through NSFAS as an information that couldn't be satisfied between NSFAS and the respective TVET colleges according to the scope of auditing by the AG. And it's a matter that we are following up. So in respect to that, we have acknowledged that, and it's one of the serious problems that we are dealing with insofar as data reconciliation between TVET colleges and NSFAS data is one of the key issues. I would like to just at this time ask Dai Parker to come in respect to universities, Aruna, Ms. Mpopo, as well as the CET, then CFO, and we will wrap up through, with your permission, Chair. Dai?
Thank you, DG. I think, DG, you more or less covered the issues with respect to universities. I suppose just to emphasize that there are regulations that the Minister has gazetted under the Higher Education Act in terms of reporting requirements of universities, and all universities have to comply to those reporting requirements. Those reporting requirements were drafted in conjunction with the AG, and although the universities don't have to follow the PFMA, they are expected to meet all the accounting standards and are expected to comply completely with the various kinds of policies. In terms of supply chain management, each university has to have its own policy, and the department has worked quite closely with universities to identify good practices across the system in terms of such policies. And that's been particularly important in terms of the infrastructure development program. You will be aware, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, that we have a macro infrastructure framework that has been put in place whereby universities have to report on a monthly basis and where we have a very close oversight of what is happening on the ground in terms of the implementation of infrastructure delivery, and a support program to improve the capability and capacity of institutions at the institutional level to ensure proper delivery management and infrastructure delivery management. And part of that has been a focus on procurement. And in fact, the policies that were developed within the higher education sector, within the university sector, in relation to the development of the two new universities, University of Mpumalanga and Solklaki University, were the blueprint for the National Treasury procurement processes, which are part of the PFMA. So I think that it may be something that we could report on in terms of what those requirements are, how those requirements are embedded, how we do the oversight and monitoring of the system, and how we keep universities accountable in terms of the public funds that they receive. In terms of the analysis of the funding at universities, we are still currently examining the 2019 reports in terms of finalizing those, because the annual reports were only due in at the end of September, and we will be finalizing our analysis of that for approval by the DG by the end of March this year. And going through those reports, we deal with all the issues with regard to governance and with regard to financial health, and specifically in terms of the budgets of institutions. And we are able to then indicate the total amounts and percentages, et cetera, that are come into university budgets from the three streams of funding. Thank you very much.
Aruna?
Thank you, DG, and good afternoon to the honourable members and chair and to the DM. DG, I'll just cover, I think there were three areas that came up repeatedly. I just want to provide clarity in the first case in terms of the under-expenditure and the $74 million in particular that is of concern. That is circumscribed for the regional offices. It's compensation of employees, yes, but it is very specifically for the regional offices. And the regional offices do have several vacancies, and there are gaps there, but those vacancies have to be filled in by the six regions. And that is quite substantial. So it's not perhaps the whole $74 million, but a huge, huge chunk of that $74 million is the compensation of employees, where the regional offices now have to make those appointments in the gaps that they have. And this is a gradual process. As we know, the regional offices, the regional managers were only recently appointed. The regional directors still haven't been confirmed in all cases. And then all the layers underneath that, there are major gaps that have to be filled. So I just wanted to give clarity to where that big part of the compensation of employees is sitting. Chair, the other big area is in relation to the performance of colleges and the audit report that was presented by the AG and the concerns around the audit outcomes of many of the colleges. Overall, the AG's office indicated that there has been improvement, but of course we too are concerned about some of the slippages that happened, where we've got new colleges on board that have regressed. I think it's particularly the regressed colleges that we are concerned about. Now, just to indicate that in terms of the department, what we have provided colleges with is 29 policies that meet the minimum requirements of the PFMA. You know, colleges are not required to be compliant fully with the PFMA, but there are minimum requirements in the PFMA that have to be adhered to. So what the department has done is developed 29 policies covering various expense areas and submitted them to the colleges. What the colleges are required to do through the councils is to develop institutional policies that meet these minimum standards, which means they can enhance them, you know, put more tighter measures in place, but they have to meet the minimum requirements. And then it has to be adopted by council. And then council exercises oversight over those policies. And from the department side, we do oversight. The first oversight is by council at the governance level. From the department side, we monitor colleges. There are visits to about 20% of the colleges annually, and the rest are monitored as a desktop exercise. Now, the assurance I want to give is that in every one of these instances where there were gaps found or some wrongdoing on the part of the college, we have always sent out letters or feedback with regular feedback, especially visits have been undertaken, and where they were found to be irregular practices, then in those cases warning letters have been sent. And there is follow-up on those warnings. And right now I can indicate, for example, one of the honorable members mentioned Talezzo as a repeat offender. There's disciplinary action underway there at the level of the principal. And that we should have an outcome on that very shortly. The point I want to emphasize, Chair, is that we have had principals who were suspended. I would say about 3 years ago, we had a great number of principals who were suspended for similar things. And if the cases are not airtight, almost all of them, to my knowledge, had been reinstated after a year or year and a half or whatever. So undertaking these disciplinary measures and seeing what the outcomes are is something we don't take lightly, because we don't want to get to a point where the outcome of the disciplinary measure is overturned easily through any kind of court action. And finally, Chair, I'm not sure if we understood this correctly, whether the information reported by the department was of concern in Program 4, the concern expressed by the AG's office. We have certainly engaged the AG's office on very particular targets and how we have reported on them, because we found that there was probably a hairline's difference in the interpretation of how we should report on those targets. We have discussed it, so it's not by any means negligence or an intention to misreport. It's something I do think that for Program 4 we need to take up as a discussion with the Office of the AG, because we too would like that comfort if there's any kind of mistrust, so to speak, of the reporting. Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Mbop?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. I will just explain to person on the nature of the exit by the CFO. I just want to explain that because the matter was finalized before the CFO had gone on his retirement. Therefore, the nature of the exit, it was handled as a dismissal. It is not an early retirement. Just to explain on that particular one.
The whole situation, what happened actually?
Well, Chairperson, it relates to the irregular expenditure which has been reported to by the acting CFO on the appointment of a service provider that did not get the highest score. That is the one that dates back from 2015. There was a forensic investigation that the accounting officer had conducted, and the report was handed over to Labor Relations for processing around the last quarter of 2019. So whilst the processes were going on in regard to labor processes, the CFO then submitted his intention to go on an early retirement, but the disciplinary process is continued. So that is what has happened, chairperson, in regard to the CFO. So when we received the sanction from the chairperson of the disciplinary hearing, we implemented the sanction as pronounced by the chairperson.
Okay.
Yes, and then Chairperson, I would leave the question of the CFO to the Chairperson to check with DPSA. However, as I have explained, the intention of the Minister is to appoint, to second the CFO, Ms. Makukule, to the Department of Education and Training on a full-time basis, and there are administrative processes that are already underway in regard to that Chairperson. Then there was a question on...
I don't know why you're still repeating what you said, Mrs. Mbogo, because that's exactly what you said before. The issue is compliance with the law. We are a constitutional state, we're a law-governed society. Everything that you do in your area of deployment or area of work is regulated by law, by legislation. All what we are asking is whether this arrangement, is it lawful, is it legal, is it allowed? Because all of us were hearing about these things for the first time. So please don't repeat what you said. We heard what you said. That is the intention. But I'm saying that it could have been handled differently. And I don't want us to continue on this matter because we are also very mindful of the fact that it involves Mrs. Pretty, and she's in the meeting, and it's not really about her. We don't want to. We're very happy with the performance, as we said. But you are putting her into some very strange arrangement, which has got the capacity to compromise even herself. So let's move on.
Okay, Chairperson. There was a question, Chair, around some of the cases or irregular cases that were reported from 2015, 2016. I just want to say, Chairperson, it's not different cases. In some of those cases, it's just that I won't be able to go back to the slides now, but it would be the same. And one case that has taken long is because there was an interaction between between the department and National Treasury to clarify exactly, you know, the kind of irregular expenditure that was incurred. There was actually no agreement initially that there has been irregular expenditure. However, after the forensic investigation was conducted on the same case, so it's not different cases, then we then followed the labor relation processes. On the question, Chairperson, of the criminal cases opened, yes, we do open criminal cases. We've got cases where the cases are already with the Hawks for an investigation. And in some of those cases, we will also advise the college councils, where the college councils are employers, to also open criminal cases. We currently have, on some of the reports, we have two cases that are with the Hawks. Then on the last one, Chairperson, on vacancies, I just want to clarify, maybe to give some background on the vacancies and the lack of capacity in the department. The organizational structure of the DHET was approved last year around April. And before that, we couldn't fill positions permanently because there was no structure that was approved and concurred with by the Department of Public Service and Administration. What we have been planning to do, Chairperson, we had reported when we came earlier on that we are implementing an e-recruitment system. We should go a long way to assist the department in managing recruitment, because when the colleges were transferred to the DHT in 2015, we did not have capacity to manage their recruitment processes. So our strategy included e-recruitment. It also included the decentralization of functions back to the colleges. However, Chairperson, we had a problem with e-recruitment because there's a moratorium that has been put in place by the National Treasury for us to wait for the integrated financial management system. Yes. Then the last one is the decentralization to colleges. We've done the assessment, Chairperson. 41 colleges were ready for us to decentralize recruitment and other HR processes by 1 April, but we couldn't proceed because of the lockdown. But we are now on course to implement the decentralization. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Who's the last 40 minutes? This thing of recruitment, it must still be on the report that must come, because it's a worrying thing. Recruitment of staff, especially at TVET colleges and in the department and in the branches of the department. Who's next? Are we done? DG, we're fine.
CFO.
CFO.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Thanks, CG. I think the other questions were covered by Ms. Singh, and the other one to a greater extent by Ms. Mbobo. I will just cover a question that was asked by Honorable Lizie, on the impact of the 1.1 billion rand cut that was effected this year during the AENE. What transpired there is that during the month of October, we were notified by National Treasury that there was a decision to cut 1% of our budget due to the pressures in the fiscus, and it was also revealed that there was money required to bail out the South African Airways. We were then given about 2 days to find the money, and we know how Treasury operates. If they give you an opportunity to find it, you don't do it, they do it for you. So we have identified that there was still money that was due to be transferred under the infrastructure for the TVET and universities. We engaged the relevant colleagues who are the budget holders in that space, and the issues that emanated from that those engagements with them is that those cuts might result in some delays in finalizing some of the infrastructure program. However, not to a very large extent, because there were, in any case, some delays, most of them attributed to the pandemic, as the construction sector did not operate in some levels of the lockdown. And then some institutions had already had surpluses from the previous allocation where there was low spending. I think some of the picture was shown by the DG in the presentation earlier on. So we presented the proposal to the DG, and we then agreed that we're going to process figure research in that manner. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's wrap up now.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Lastly, in wrapping up, one issue on this irregular expenditure thing. The irregular expenditure areas here that are spoken of are not irregular expenditure areas that result into the supply chain management processes not being intact and not doing their work. It's as a result of individuals who go outside the normal processes and procedures and procure these services. And we pick them up through the work that the supply chain management processes are undertaking, as well as internal audit. Hence then, I'm saying, upon conclusion of investigations around those irregular expenditure areas, they then get subjected to consequence management, as honorable members are using. There is nobody who is going to escape or who has ever escaped the due processes in terms of government legislated and the policy mechanisms that are in place in respect to these matters. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you, DG. I think we've come to the end. I know that members have been raising a lot of issues, some of which have not been responded. So we'll appreciate responses on issues that you are not able to respond because of time. I think members will also assist in identifying issues. So yeah, and then on this issue of universities, I think we will do the same as we will be doing with the CITAS. We will identify four universities or three or four universities where there are concerns around the audit outcomes. We will invite them, we'll call them to a meeting. We are told by the AG that the department has got the audit reports. We will ask the department to facilitate whoever did the audit to come and present it to us as we do universities. We'll schedule them probably early next year so that we can get to interact with them. But we're still not happy with the standard of compliance. I hear Dr. Parker, but it does look like, well, from what we've heard from the Auditor General here, is that the only participated in as far as one area is concerned, not around supply chain management issues and all of that. So it does look like the regulations that are there currently fall short of the required standards that has been set by the Public Finance Management Act. And that's an area where we're saying that there has to be a compliance. For instance, there's the kind of policies that exist does not indicate under what circumstances must you disclose in the financial statement irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In the same way as public institutions, public entities are supposed to disclose. So there is a difference there, and that's the difference that we must zoom into, deal with, and to address, because the concern is how these public funds have been utilized. So I think we were done, honorable members. It's almost 2 o'clock. And is it 2 minutes past 2? We are supposed to lock off this platform and get into another session of the National Assembly. Friday, we are meeting again. Friday, we are with the National Student Financial Aid Scheme to follow up on the issues that were raised by Nehao. So we've got that meeting on Friday. So let's meet on Friday at 9 o'clock. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.